be here in a few minutes, but Rob, do you have introductions or announcements to make?
Just a little bit of introduction. Doug Jenkins is sitting in for Wayne France. Wayne called earlier. And Alan Parks is still on the phone, right, Alan?
Yes, I'm here.
Sitting in for Dan Dyes. The only other type of announcements are the commission will meet on the 26th. So some of what occurs tonight will pertain to, you know, the agenda that we'll have at the commission. Some is still progressing forward, as you know. So just so you understand the way things are going, we advertised, is there anyone who saw the notice yet, the public notice that we put out 15 days in advance of the commission date?
I did.
Okay, so you did see it.
Very verbose.
Yes, very verbose. Joe, do you hear that?
I heard.
All right.
That's okay, it just is.
So we want to revise the dates associated with season limits and commercial bushel, vessel, and possession limits. This is left open-ended on purpose, as well as revise restrictions on the lawful harvesting dates on a gear-specific basis. What does that mean? That means that the gear types other than crab pot were closed September 30th, right, in 2014, and the season didn't open till May 1. So that verbose language allows the commission to have the ability to not worry about whether something is more restrictive or less restrictive or anything along those lines. We also had a situation that law enforcement proposed to us where there's a dual role of some of the harvesters where they have a crab pot license and they also have a buyer's license. And so the concern there by law enforcement is that that's a way for them to circumvent the vessel limit. So that will be brought up at the commission as well. And then the dark sponge crab, which has been discussed at nearly every crab management advisory committee that I can remember for a long time, usually gets some mention. That will also be something the commission will look at, and Rom Lipschitz will be here to present some information relative to that date. Last time, you remember, we agreed that we would advertise, and we did, that it could be lawful to possess dark-colored sponge crabs as early as June 1. Again, the reason we said that is that gives the commission the flexibility to set that date either June 1 or somewhere between June 1 and the current July 1. So that'll be at the commission. The other situation is the sanctuary, and last time you looked at three different options relative to the sanctuary and ended up moving away from those options. But there's still an option to consider that, again, Rom will go over. The options are there was a request, and it is advertised for Area 4, that area be open out to a half mile in between Rudy and Cape Henry. So that's, and Joe has a chart of that, don't you? Joe has a chart of that. The other part of the sanctuary is in Area 1 and 2. So Area 1 is everything above the 1942 sanctuary on up. And Area 2 is the 1942 sanctuary. And last time we briefly looked at some date changes where one area, the upper area, would close later and the 1942 sanctuary would close earlier. And it was portrayed as a two-week period, I think, is the way that was portrayed, to close the 1942 sanctuary on May 1 and close the upper part of the sanctuary June 1. So Rom has some more information on that tonight as well. We're certainly waiting to see what he has. I have not seen it. And those are the crab issues. The last one is the dredge fishery. The commission each year has to consider whether to close the dredge fishery season as it has done since 2008. So, you know, that came out of a ruling where each year the commission has to go through that process. So that will be also something that the commission as well. I'll remind you, if you weren't here, that the triggers that would open the dredge fishery season were already presented to CMAQ. They've been presented to the goal implementation team, that's the Baywide group. They've been presented to CBSAC, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, before they were to the GIT. The only group they haven't been presented to is the commission. So the commission will receive that information on May 26 as well. The situation with the triggers are, it's not as if it's easy to meet the triggers, because you have to have the exploitation rate, or the removal rate has to be fairly low. It has been for the last 6 years. But the abundance of both the spawning age females and the juveniles has to meet a certain criteria. It's not going to meet it this year, I can tell you that right now. But the commission is going to look at this every year. You may remember in 2013, at the August meeting, staff and VIMS both recommended there could be a modified winter dredge fishery season. It was mainly from York Spit up on the western side, and the dates would have been mid-December to the end of February, so modified in the dates. There would have been, I think at the time, it was a limited amount of bushels that could be involved there. If you did go to that meeting in August, there was sort of a split between the industry members. Some definitely wanted to see it open. Some said wait till things are a little bit better. So I don't think much has changed, at least from staff's viewpoint, for this upcoming season. But, you know, I know that question will come up, so I thought I would answer it right now. And that's what's going on at the commission for crabs.
Thank you, Rob.
Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
What does staff think about opening up crab dredges?
What does staff think about it?
Do you support it or don't support it? I mean, what are you going to do at the meeting?
We're not going to support it this time. That's what I just said.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because of the abundance level.
So,
and because it doesn't meet the triggers.
Well, I don't care about the triggers, Rob. We've discussed this before. I mean, it's discrimination. I don't care how you put it. You can roll it up in a towel, put it any way you want. That industry was made and bought a long time before crab pot ever came out. I don't see why a trigger should have anything to do with opening up crab dredging, because if it should, then it should have the same thing to do with crab pot. That's the way the law has always been. That's the way it should be, my opinion.
No, it's a good opinion. And, you know, the only situation is, and I know Ken has a question too, the only situation is that we have less abundance with the spawning crabs than we did in 2013. And I think there was an opportunity. I'm not going to take any one particular area here, but I think there was an opportunity back then to maybe at least make an impression on the commission.
Well,
the commission walked away with an impression that here you have staff and VIMS saying, yes, there's a reduced abundance, but it can be a very confined, controlled fishery, and it won't be in the hard bottom areas. And yet the message that was conveyed to the commission, I didn't think was overall
right.
The right message. Now, it's 2 years later almost, so.
Well, my thing of it is with the way crabbing has been, it will never get any better if we keep going down the same road we're on. And bottom line, you know, after 7 years or 8 years or 7 years, I don't see it getting any better unless we go down a different path. And like I've said at the meetings before, we've sat on the sidelines for 8 years, sitting there waiting for things to get better. With every implementation we put in place, we're hoping to get better. Gets a little better, then it goes right back down in the trash. So with that being said, I don't know how the commission feels about it or CMAQ, but it's, well, we're just being discriminated on.
We'll be at the commission meeting, and we will have what we had in 2013 to show the commission with your prompt. So, you know, bring up the information. We'll show the commission exactly what we had in mind. I think at that time we had 32 eligible crab dredge harvesters. I already gave you the dates we had, which was narrowing the dates, the areas. We had the chart. I don't think it's a bad idea to show the commission all that at all.
Right.
And then have the conversation.
I'm just not real fond of the triggers. It just hits me. It just gets me in a bad way when I know what's going on in the industry.
I think let Joe present the triggers at the commission and then bring that up. I mean, they were put in place by a former commissioner. They charged staff with coming up with his triggers. We did that. You know the commission has the ability to use any information that it wants to use that is in light of conservation and everything else. So, but anyway, I think Ken Ken had his hand up earlier.
I'm in agreement with Jimmy Dean on the triggers part.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been proven that the crabs that you would have caught dredging, you're catching in the spring anytime. You know, so if that's the case, why don't, and I mean, if I think you think about this from the economic part of it, at first when the crabs came out this year, it was a big high price. You could have gotten that price or better during the winter for those few crabs. Then your price dropped down. Now it's back up again, but it might be able to fluctuate that time better taking those crabs out and having so many on the market at different times that you demand a higher price all year.
Yeah.
And I think that for the economics part of it, if the same crab's going to be caught in the winter as it would be in the spring, why not let the boys catch them when they can make the most money out of it?
Well, I'm pretty sure that the August 2013 evaluation had that information in about the spring, because you remember in 2012 we saw that spike in the harvest and the effort doubled, and the harvest in the spring by crab pot went up to 2.4 million pounds. And we also showed the graph, the chart that showed that the effort switched over and the harvest switched over to crab pot. So we've showed that information. There's no problem in referencing that information again. Staff doesn't have any problem talking about that.
Can the thing about this trigger, can that be readdressed?
Well, I think you have mainly a new commission, pretty much, compared to then. But, I mean, it was something that everyone went through. It can be readdressed depending on what the commission says it really is looking for. The way the triggers are, you know, I looked at them last week with Joe. There might be as many as 5 years out of 25 or 26 where you would meet the triggers. So, you know, it's about a 25% situation. It can be just on abundance. So, you know, we had fairly good abundance in 2010 and 2011. That would have met the triggers there on abundance, because we don't know what the harvest rate is or the removal rate until after the season's over anyway. So I think it's open to be readdressed. I'm just not sure in what way we would readdress it.
Mr. Powers?
So one of the issues that I have with this concept of changing the triggers or whatever, I assume the triggers are primarily on abundance, but if we don't see substantial abundance back to those triggers, is the industry willing to do something where they see a substantial reduction in harvest in the spring so that you can open up the dredge fishery, and substantial meaning an equivalent amount? I mean, if you're saying these are the same crabs you catch in the spring, so fine, we catch them in the winter, but then we do something so you can't catch them and can't keep that harvest up in the spring, so you have the abundance for the spawn.
But here's the problem you have with that. You can't control it. How you gonna control pot numbers, pot limits, bushel limits? There's no way to control it. Just like I've said all along with the dredge industry, it was the neatest little package. Had three places to take out. You brought your gear home with you every day. You had a limit. Crab pots, there's no way to control how many you're setting. There's no many way to control how many
there
you're
are. There are ways to control it. It's
well,
just
well, then let's do it.
They're not doing it. They
well,
doing it.
realize that we have smaller bushel limits during that March period. That's one way you can say that you've controlled it. However, if there's a lot of crabs out there, then all of a sudden you have a 2012 again on a smaller scale, but you're going to have more effort and you're going to have more harvest.
Same thing.
Mr. Nixon?
The other thing, and this issue came up this winter at the General Assembly, I think Doug and some others up north had Delegate Ransom and Rob Boxham put a couple bills in trying to address our out-of-state issue. And you're going to allow, or you currently allow, out-of-state crabbers, particularly from Maryland, to come down, and they participate in our spring fishery, and we don't get any benefit from that at all. But yet, you've got the dredge fishery closed at the same time. Now, I don't know what you can do about out-of-state people, but it's just something else to consider as far as how the Virginia crabber and the dredger has been discriminated against in some manner.
Yeah, all we can do on the out-of-state situation is charged with contacting six other states, I think it is, and getting their rules on how they deal with non-residents and the fees that they charge and everything else, and then we have to report that back so that the commissioner can take that back to the legislative group. So that's what we're trying.
I understand that, but it's still the, I don't know what you want to call it, you know, the equivalency factor, the morality of the issue that we have a fishery closed in Virginia because we don't want to take those crabs in the wintertime, but at the same time, by law, we're required to allow out-of-state crabbers to come down and take those crabs back to Maryland with no benefit at all to Virginia buyers or anything. You know, they don't even have to go through our system.
Mr. Cox.
What you said, the eligibility was for dredgers, because for years we've been going through this, and it was 51, and it would come down to 30, and then we finally realized it was 51. So why does this keep switching back and forth?
It hasn't switched since 2013, and I'm digging back a little bit, but we started with everyone who had dredged, but then narrowed it down to certain time periods. And I think what came out of that was in the 30s. That was recommended. The 53.
Yeah, but that stayed 53.
The 53
for years
is what goes back to 2008, but of the 53, only in the 30s had a harvest history, which was a few years or a few seasons. I think that's how we worked that out. But it was around 30. It was in the 30s.
So over a period of a couple of years, we lost 30 more dredgers.
No,
20
more.
You know, 20 some dredgers. It was into 51 or 52 for years and years and years, and because me and you've been over this before, and then boom, now it's in the 30s.
Well, it's been in the 30s.
Next step, it'd be 10. I mean, it's nothing now, so the next step would be 10.
It's only in the 30s if the commission supported the limited entry part of this that staff proposed at that time. The commission could have said, well, we don't like the fact that you're going by harvest history for these many seasons to make them part of the 30 whatever. We'd rather just see it open, or we'd rather just see 60. In other words, that was what we presented to the commission. The commission never really endorsed any of that. They simply unanimously voted down the season.
Okay.
That's how that worked. But that was just a proposal.
So how many are eligible?
It depends how the commission cares to look at it.
You just told me 30-some did.
With our proposal, with the staff proposal.
So that's what staff would recommend if.
Yeah.
Okay. We lost 20-some dredgers.
Joe wants to add something.
Marshall,
real quick.
This was 2 years ago. It was about 37. The thing was, we came up with that number through a set of criteria that we worked out between staff in this committee.
I've been on this committee, I've been here 20 years.
All right, so it wasn't just something we put out there. Right. This is something that went unanimously in front of the commission in October 2013. Okay, so we can get all this up. We'll show it to the commission next week. It's been requested. But this is stuff we worked out with y'all and pushed very hard to try and get through in October of 2013. Okay, and one of the e-commerce we got as industry when we were doing this was wouldn't probably be able to put 20 boats on the water because no one had their rigs anymore. They're all rusted up.
No, all about that, yeah. But that don't mean that don't mean they wouldn't come back.
51,
so you got Joe all excited. Look how excited you got, Joe.
Hey, I'm getting excited myself.
Be 20, okay? Any would be good based on what Jimmy's talking about.
Right. Good job. So we don't have any problem as a staff with giving the commission the snapshot of the information that we already presented. I think the reason for that is we know there probably
surprised.
Only there's probably only wouldn't one commission member,
how fast are people put some rigs
with Sessoms, and Lynn, who else?
Jimmy Dean.
No, Jimmy. Was Jimmy Dean there?
What was that? I don't know. I'm still asleep. I ain't had no sleep in a couple days. Excuse me.
When did you start?
You were there for the crab dredging issue. No, you were not. Okay.
Commission from the audience.
Oh, it was just the two of us then.
Yeah. So we have validation to do that. We will do that. If you wish to make any, information known to the commission, then of course we'll meet after lunch. After noon, after 12, and make your points. I think that's all we can offer.
Thank you. Okay. I guess we need to jump back and approve the minutes from the April 27th meeting. Are there any corrections?
Madam Chairman, I have a correction on the back page, new business, where it says that the tag is all the way to the bottom. It says tagging system will cost, and how would it compensate the gear license due to winter. That winter needs to be changed to weather, not winter.
Did staff understand that?
Yes, got it.
Thank you. Any other corrections?
After correction, I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as presented.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
One abstention.
And one abstention. Okay. I think she got it. All right, minutes are approved, and we'll move forward with management measures for July 2015 through June 2016, starting with modifications to gear-specific seasons and possession limits. I'm sorry.
Okay. Where's Rob? But what we can do is we can tell you what the bushel limits did and didn't do from July on, because you realize from July 5th through July 4th of this year that we just are getting to, that's where the bushel limits applied. So Joe can give you some ideas on how the bushel limits did. I think what we talked about, we had a meeting earlier today, and we talked about showing the commission for each pot category from 85 pots up to 425, who had 25% or less of the bushel limits? How many harvesters? How many harvesters had in between 25 and 50%, 50 and 75%, and how many reached it? And so Joe can present that information. It's not in table form, but it will be for the commission. And then the other idea is we've looked at the minor gear types. And I'm doing this from memory, but I think the crab pot is probably about 94% of the fishery. It's been right around there the last few years. So the minor gear types are pretty much everything else. The peeler fishery bounced up a little bit in 2014 for the annual, for the whole year, up to just above 1 million pounds. It's been below that for the previous 3 years, but they're still minor gear types, and so we're looking at, is there any leeway there to change those seasons, which I mentioned earlier. Right now it's a September 30th closure in the fall and a May 1 startup in the spring, so maybe Joe can fill you in a little bit.
Yeah. Don't give me a minute. I'll put this up on the they don't have this in a PowerPoint format.
There's wrong.
Yeah,
You changed the meeting time, Rob.
Boy, we're fancy.
Can we get a copy of that? I can't see that.
Eventually, it's fine.
Zoom in.
This is still in progress.
Getting better.
Yeah.
And then focus.
Can you see that?
Yeah, I can.
I can see it, but it's out of focus. Yeah, I know.
There's a package. All right, so I'll just walk through this. We don't even have this ready for PowerPoint or anything. We're just finishing this up right before the meeting. So what we did was we went back and we looked at last fall, because that's the complete data set that we have for the crab pot fishery and the different gear categories, the bushel limits they had to adhere to, and looked at all the reporting to match up what the vessel limit bushel limit was. Because if you remember in the regulation, if more than three people are on board a vessel and they all have crab pot licenses, it's the highest bushel limit that adhered to the vessel. So we matched up everything to make sure we had everything assigned. So if a 85 crab pot person and a 425 crab pot person on the same boat, that trip was assigned the bushel limit for 45 crab pot, or the 425 crab pot. So the top graph, the top table pretty much is from July 5th through November 15th. And then we had reduced bushel limits from November 16th until November 30th. And when we look by, if you look at by gear, and you look at the smaller gears, the 85 crab pot one really is the one that stood out the most. They had probably the higher percentage of reaching their limit, but they also, you know, they had 12% harvested, 100% of their bushel limit. Of course, this is also a lot of your part-timers and all, just your every fly-by-night people are in this category, so I'm not surprised to see less than 25% or 50% attained their bushel limit on this category. But you do note they're the one that definitely hit their bushel limit the most frequently last fall. Both the pre-time period and then in those last 2 weeks of November, 21% actually hit their bushel limit in those last 2 weeks. They dropped from 10 down to 8 bushels. On the higher category pots, especially the 255, the 425, they had varying degrees of reaching, you know, 50 to 74%, 75 to 99% of the bushel limit was attained. So their 2 to 3% really hit it during the main part of the last fall. But when we got into those last 2 weeks where it dropped down, obviously they started hitting it there. They were still going strong. Some were still going strong right to November 30th. So, the Ken Diggs, the last meeting, was making a pretty strong comment about your full-time crabber out here, and they work every day, and, you know, they can hit their limits. And that's what shows up here. That's your full-time guys who carried out right through the season and worked right to the end. And they were grinding it out, and they were finding the crabs. Would it be seeing the lower percentage, you know, the higher percentages down where they had maybe they only were able to get 25% of the bushel limit? It's not a big shock. This incorporates also July and August, which was still slow. But we have looked at the information comparing 2014 to previous years by month to see where it turned out. And the earlier part of 2014 is one of the lower ones we've seen in the last 6-7 years. But the second half of 2014, from what I've looked at, both with catch per unit effort and just with trips, it was, if not in the middle, on the higher end of the last 6 to 7 years. It really came on in the fall, which was something we weren't too surprised by. We were talking about that juvenile class coming into the fishery last fall, and it looks like it really did start popping in the fall. So the guys have really grinded out there. Seemed like they did okay. Some people switched on over to oysters by October and got out, so that affects this a little bit, you know. Some people switched over and finished up maybe to striped bass or something else. But those who grinded out
you know, they were getting the work done. So this will be in prepared as a PowerPoint for the commission and will be available for the commission.
Wouldn't that, like when October came and a lot of people went oystering and stuff, and wouldn't that affect the bushel limits going up because it's a lot less effort?
It's possible. If you take pots out of the water, effort out of the water, it's going to also help in that, which it should anyway.
Sure. But, I mean, that's basically what I want to say. You know, a lot less effort out there, so, you know, they're going to do better in the fall.
We can tell you that by the commission date, because what you typically see is 550 harvesters in October, and by November it drops off to usually around 250. So we can look at the trend through years, because oysters spiked in 2011, and then went up even more. So that's a good thing we'll point out.
We'll have that available.
Mr. Bowers.
Two general comments. One is, if I were writing this graph, it'd be 75% to N minus 1, not 99%, because 1% difference doesn't make sense. But so I assume that the second from the right column for the first row means they got nine bushels or less, and the last one is they landed 10 bushels. Is that what that means?
On the second right, yeah.
And that means that more or less universally down the ground. Okay. The other question is, that's not clear, is if someone stopped crabbing, they don't make it to this list. So this is of people who reported crab landings on a given day.
This is trips. Okay. This is based on the trips. You can't do this. You have to do this work by trips.
Okay.
Not just by the individual, because a lot of times you had two or three individuals on a boat and you're working off their highest bushel limit attained for the vessel. So this is really based on the vessel trip.
Okay.
Okay. That's what you're trying to attain here.
Right. So in that case, I would also consider adding a column that's the number of vessel trips that make up the statistics.
All right. Anything else?
Any other questions? Mr. Nixon.
One thing that's interesting to me, and this was the case before, it's just been scaled down, that the 85 pot license gets a higher percentage than any of the other licenses of 100% of its bushel limit. It makes me wonder, can you get all 85 pots on a good spot and you can't get 255 on a good spot? You know, you're down to 3% and 2% on the big full-time crabbers, and it makes me wonder if those 85 pot folks are still pushing the envelope on how many pots I have overboard.
Yeah, it does make me wonder that, doesn't it, Pete?
I think so. The other thing is, you were talking about on the bottom chart there about how things improved in the fall for everybody. What we need to do is figure out how to get things improved in the early part of the season, not just the first month of spring, but, you know, through the 4th of July through August. That's where your highest market value is. When you get into October and November, demand slows down, the prices drop down, people aren't thinking about buying crabs after Labor Day.
You're talking right into what we discussed June of last year about conserving the juveniles of last year to become the spawning females, the adults for this spring, not just for the spawning, but also a key component of the catch in the spring. So it's exactly where that management plan was working toward, not just the fall, because this is the date I can present. I mean, once the spring's over, I can look at the spring and see how the spring went, you know, but we're
right.
Still in that. But that's what that management plan talked about last year was serving the juveniles, get them through the fall into the spring to be our spawners this year, but also to be they are the core component of the spring fishery.
Yeah, I know down at the lower end where I am that our little bit upriver crabbing is still pitiful. It's just, you know, really pathetic. And that's when we have our market. You know, we had some nice, good big crabs in the fall, but she got to have enough people to buy what little I catch. They just, you know, weren't interested.
Right. And I know you've relayed that over to us, and trying to look for anywhere else. I've talked to someone with the James, said they're doing fine in the James. That doesn't.
I heard that.
What's going on in the James doesn't equate to where you're crabbing.
No. Well, you saw the numbers that you presented to us from 2003 to 2013, where we are down there. It dropped off better than 75, almost 80%. And I think part of that is just relative to the amount of effort that we have down there all summer long. That's it.
Any other questions? We've got one question out in the audience. Mr. Farrington?
My question is, is this law where you can have two or three different licenses on one vessel, and you've got a 5-1-5 license as the vessel owner, and then you've got a 170-pod license working with them, and then an 85-pod license working with them. You got three rigs that pops in the water, but they're all able to catch a 5-1-5 limit. So you got 85-pod license holder working on a big rig. So how are you calculating your effort in getting these numbers?
The effort's based on trips, as we've continued to say, and we have broken out on every trip that's been reported what the highest reported license type was on that vessel, and that way we attribute this to the correct vessel limit.
They're still harvesting crabs, but this one commercial fisherman's crab pots and the other commercial fisherman's crab pots. You don't know whose crab pots are coming out with the crabs, but they're all calculating the highest limit. Maybe that needs to be changed.
So I think I understand the crux of your questions. Correct me if I get this wrong. Is so you could have a boat. Say you have two people with 255 licenses on a boat. They could have 500 pots overboard, and they could land 20 bushels, and they still wouldn't make. And they would or 21 bushels, which is really. Say, or if they make 20 bushels out of those 500 pots, they're really making kind of 10 bushels. It's really misleading to think that they've gotten most of their harvest that they would be eligible for.
Can I get a clarification on what I understand what Ty is getting at? If you have three licenses on a boat, you can still only catch one limit, right. But it's the highest limit.
But you can have.
This committee recommended that either a year or two ago during February or March. Let's say it's February, March of 2013. That was a recommendation of the Crab Management Committee. We got it in place.
But you can have all the pots out for those three licenses, so they're almost guaranteed being able to catch that limit every day because they're getting a 3-day soak.
Mr. Powell.
Working all that gear.
So this goes back to what Tig, I think, is getting at is, so what is the value of this data if I don't know how many pots were overboard when they did or didn't reach that limit? Because if you work harder, you'll catch more crabs, and you'll be able to sell more, and if you get more pots over, but it doesn't tell us if this is being effective at reducing effort, which I think is a real key here. I've always been of the opinion since 1993 when they started allowing all the peeler pots in and they didn't cut back somewhere on something else, that this fishery is just overcapitalized. Still
Rob,
is.
Could you help?
So, yeah, I think the value is that it's the best thing. So the record is complete with many observations from industry that harvesters are setting more pots than their license category allows. Law enforcement cannot spend time to be pulling pots, and law enforcement gets frustrated by the fact that pots are in one area and also in another area, and the buoys and everything else. So the vessel limit is what we have to go by, and it does achieve the necessary conservation regardless of how many pots you have out there. But yes, it would be good someday to see a licensee be on the vessel, but the code talks about efficiency. So where practical, the committee commission is supposed to look for ways that there can be efficient use. And that is doubling up and tripling up.
Right, and I don't debate that the regulations, the way they're written, are not good regulations. I'm just saying that the analysis that you're doing is misleading, because when I first saw it, I figured that 255 crab pot license means that that vessel that came into that 15% had no more than 255 pots work that day.
You can't even assume that if it's a single person reporting with an 85 crab pot license. You can't even assume that.
You can if you think that people stay legal.
Well,
again, you can't even assume that.
Yeah.
Mr. Dean.
When you put a bounty on anything, and I've said it at different meetings, when the price goes up, more gear goes in the water, regardless. Yep. Doesn't matter. And that's why I'm just going to say it. That's why I'm so upset when they cut crab dredging out in 08. That was the less effort it was in the industry. And to turn around and to shut that industry down and open up more effort from licenses to just sit back. And, you know, we're still here at the same place doing the same things. And we're getting nowhere with it. That's it.
Further discussion? How to move forward? Recommendations?
Four.
So should there be modifications to the gear specific? Is that what we are here?
Right.
So that's the question for us.
Whatever.
Do we
have any recommendations to send forth to the commission, which we'll hear this next Tuesday?
So, again, what was advertised was to, first of all, the commission proposes to revise the dates associated with season limits. That just means that last year, we established through the commission and through you this new management framework, which goes from summer to summer. What are the benefits of that? Well, one benefit is you get to see two crab dredge survey results within that time period. Granted, if the crab dredge survey results, the second one, are in early May, the commission is either going to have to establish an emergency regulation in May or do something at least by June in advance of the next summer period. So this is just really going to be a suggestion to the commission to keep that time period, that management framework, the same. That's what the first part is. The second part is the daily commercial bushel and vessel possession limits. You know, how should that be changed, or should it be changed? And you know, right now I can tell you, based on the data that Joe showed you, despite the fact that most of the comments last year were no one's going to get those bushel limits, well, someone's going to get those bushel limits, and it looks like a couple of those pot categories got from 12% to 21%. I had a sneak preview of the fall harvest. It is sort of flat. The number of harvesters runs from about 250 to 230 even last year. So staff is not going to recommend any changes to the bushel limits. They've only been in place for less than a year. And they are based on this committee. This committee recommended those bushel limits.
Mr. Sanford?
Yeah, my question is this. We went through a 10% reduction last year, and I was under the impression that that was only going to be for 1 year. And we would go back to the original bushel limits, and this is, I can't remember, I think it's like 43 or so for your 255 pot license. So that's done.
Well, I don't think it was ever a question of going back anywhere, because those bushel limits were prepared to account for the season extension. That's all those bushel limits were for, to account for extended December harvest.
So then basically we should go back to the way it was like 3 or 4 years ago then, correct?
Not correct by staff, but certainly that's something that can be brought up. Staff is going to propose to keep the bushel limits intact and the vessel limit the way they are.
Jim.
We've had one dry run, one season.
Do you have a follow-up first?
So we're going. Can we? Are we going to discuss bushel limits here now?
That's what we're.
I would yeah, I hope like so. To do that. Yeah, I hope so.
Further.
Yeah. Mr. Cox.
No, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Smith, sorry.
Oh, I'm in agreement with Marshall on part of what he said anyway. I don't know if anything was, not Marshall, but Mark, on what he said. I don't know that the thing about 43 bushels ever was mentioned last year, but I thought we were going to readdress it this year back to bushel limits and everything. And also, this stuff that we're talking about right now, and I want to get this clear, and I want everybody to hear me good on this. Last year, and it looks like every year since I've been sitting on this committee, we're given choices. Three choices come up. And we pick a choice. It's not so much that that's what we wanted. It's one of the choices we were given. Now, last year, when this came before the commission, BMRC staff got up and they made the recommendations and they said, CMAQ agrees with this. This is what CMAQ agrees with. Later, when Crabber spoke and other people spoke, we mentioned the fact that it wasn't so much that we agreed with it, it was one of the three choices we had. And Ms. Haney, you were here. Assuming Jimmy Dean was here. I know Bill Mullis was in the audience and Ty was in the audience. And commissioners said, especially this end of the table, the commissioner said that if we didn't think that's what should have been there, then we should not have voted for those choices, no matter what they were. We should have voted for what we thought, and that's what staff should have recommended to. So I'm saying that if you... I'm just saying what the commission said. So if you don't believe something and you want to see something else and you're together on it, then we ought to stay together on it. And that's how we ought to vote this time, of what we want and what you want to see. And if you don't agree with staff, then your voice should be heard.
It's always been that way, and staff will be happy to convey the committee's recommendations. Staff likes to be harmonious with the committee, but if staff is not, staff is another advisor to the commission. So nothing's changed there, I don't think.
Mr. Sanford?
Yeah, evidently we're going to talk about bushel limits, but you know, every time that we do something, I'm hearing about conservation equivalency, okay? And you're going to be talking about sanctuary and dark sponge grass. I think we should talk as a whole with everything rather than try to break it up. Yeah, before you try to, you know, put like a bushel limit on now, if you understand what I'm saying. Because I mean, if we want to have the season, you know, open for the sanctuary, then
yeah, well, we're
I
open.
Mean, you know, you need some kind of equivalency there. We can, you know, talk about bushel limits or seasons then, rather than, you know, say, okay, we want this and this is the way it is, and then move on.
We can.
That's my opinion.
Finish, go through B, C, and D, and then come back and revisit the bushel limits
come
at that
point.
But
now, you realize, and I was trying to be clear in the beginning, that we have specific items that are advertised.
Right.
And so, yes, as a committee, an advisory committee, you should leave tonight with your recommendations, whatever they may be. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be three choices. It can just be your one choice. So, I mean...
So we're everything tonight, I mean, basically, we can... I don't understand why we're rushing through certain things, personally, in my opinion.
Well, I think what we're doing is just going through what's at the commission on crabs for the advertisement. Now you know what's on there. Everything's been read, what's on there. So now, if the chair would like to proceed through the rest of the items and then come back and tackle them one at a time, that's perfectly fine.
We have a copy on the advertisement.
Mr. Cox?
I think we need to tackle this.
I think
bushel.
We send it out, but we'll get you another copy. Yeah. You have copies? Give just a minute.
Sorry. Mr.
We need to tackle the bushel limit now. Basically, what staff has said is he's asking us if we support the way the bushel limit is now. I don't think we do. So what we need to do now is for us to decide what we want the bushel limit to be. And if we decide that... we want to bump the bushel limit up the amount of gear that's your license to fish, and let's do that. And even though staff may not support what our recommendation is, he has to say what this committee supported. Whether the commission goes with it or not, they will hear what we support. So let's find out if we want to do away with the bushel limit, we want to increase the bushel limit or reduce it. Let's do that now.
I think, if I may, I think the point that Mark brought up is a good one. There are going to be other things to talk about that may impact the way you think about bushel crabs or bushels of crabs, right? Like the dark sponge crab.
Well, there yes, there may be, but I mean, if, I don't know.
Either
I mean,
way you want to go, I'm just trying to listen to your comments here.
Ours.
So I agree that we should discuss, and people can form in their mind what they want to do with bushel limits, but I believe that the correct approach is to wait and then do the voting after we discuss everything, but fully discuss each one and get it to a point where we think we we know where we want to be.
I kind of like what Marshall said personally.
Yes. Absolutely. Get it over with. Get it done.
I would rather get it done now, and then maybe we can come out a little.
Oh, man. No?
I don't think so.
No, I'm just talking about the reflection problems of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, you know. I think
it's fine. Don't,
hey,
don't,
I'll make
don't
a motion point. Right now. March 17th to June 1st, bushel limit, 51 bushels. Okay? After that, unlimited. And then, you know.
All years?
Until 51 bushels until June 1st.
All years?
All gear.
You mean all sizes of pots?
Oh, no. Excuse me. All gear, crab pot gear, yes. Peeler pot, I'll make a motion for that. And then maybe we can come back and fully, you know,
well,
discuss it.
Is that a motion?
Yeah. It's a motion.
Could you repeat the motion?
Yeah. Basically, from March 17th, when the season opens, until June 1st, a bushel limit of 51 bushels. Then after June 1st, unlimited for all gear, not all gear, but all crab pot gear. Like it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. A long time.
Right.
Mr. Smith?
Oh. Yeah, I think it should be a raise in bushel limits. All right. I don't know if that's the number and whatnot. I mean, it was more crabs, so it looks to me like you ought to have more bushel limits. But whatever this committee votes on tonight, I think it's wise that some crabbers or some people from this committee be at the commission meeting to speak for the crab advisory panel or this panel. So I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to be the guy that comes and speaks, but if it's something you want, then you better come and speak and fight for it. Because just to sit here and vote and then not to show up and support your decision, I think is a bad move.
Well, I think a lot of the motion I'm going to make is the fact that, you know, they've already taken basically our bushel limit down to nothing, and they always say that we have to have some kind of conservation measure, and they're going to talk about sanctuaries in a few minutes. And I'm quite sure, you know, I could probably budge on the 51 bushels and basically go down. And that's the reason behind the motion.
Yeah, but I just want to make sure that if we're going to vote a certain way, that people from this panel or crabbers or somebody have to be here to defend the position of why we voted that way.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with Ken.
Need a second.
Right. Any further discussion we need?
Before we discuss,
okay.
That's a terrible big jump.
Absolutely.
Don't want to sound foolish.
Realistic figure would be a bushel limit as to the increase in crabs. What was the percentage of crabs? That's an increase. Why not have that percentage in bushel limits? I mean, if you're gonna go science.
When you go up with bushel limits, we just seen right there. It doesn't matter how many pots you put in the water. It's the same thing. It's all about effort. I don't care how you look at it. You can raise the bushel limits up and go set 600 crab pots, seven after three rigs out. It's the same thing. I don't get what you're doing here.
I really don't. You know, I this is what I see. Everything that I hear is we have to be conservation equivalent. Okay, I'll make a motion, 51 bushels, we'll talk about sanctuaries. That's why I kind of wanted to talk about everything as a whole rather than jump into bushel. So really probably the thing for me would be to say, okay, I'm going to withdraw my motion, but let's talk about sanctuaries and sponge crabs would probably be the more appropriate. So
are you going to withdraw your motion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You know,
withdrawn.
Madam Chairman, he made a good point a while back when he said that when the price of crabs is up, you know, we put more gear out. Well, in years past, when you got cheaper, we put more gear out too. But we could sell then. Exactly. Yeah. The crabs were $10, and you cut them to $8, and I was catching 50. I'd put 100 more pots out. You know, so he was right. The effort,
when you raise your bushel limits up,
we put more pots out.
They put more pots out. But the thing of it is, it's right there on Joe's chart. Yeah. You know, how many are you reaching to their bushel limit? So they're putting 6, 7, 8, 1,000 pots out because the price is $65.
Yep.
Well, then there's your math. But then the effort goes out of control. So what have you achieved?
Nothing.
When you go 50 back to 51 bushels, and let's say the crabs is out, everybody goes to the market, you get $30 for them, then what have you done?
They can't enforce the effort.
What's going to happen is if you raise the limits and you double the quantity of crabs that go on the market any particular day, you're going to drop the value of the product.
Now, I'll make it clear. I'm not against
so if we're crabbing for crabs, you'll catch more crabs.
I'm not.
If you're crabbing for dollars, it's probably going to even out either way.
I think you need to leave it.
And then you're going to have less for later.
I'm not against raising the bushel limits. I'm really not, or in pro or for it. But it's just when you do that, you just increase in effort. And when you see that, it goes right down. Just like with the oyster thing, when everybody goes oyster, less effort, the crab goes up.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, it's.
Well, then let's continue. Mark, you withdrew your motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
we'll continue on.
Rob.
Just one comment about the bushel limits. I don't think there's anything mysterious about them. We've had 68.5 million. Spawning age crabs, last survey, 101 million rounded up. This survey, in 2010, it was 248 million spawning age female crabs, and in 2011, it was about 187 because of that winter kill. So bushel limits were put in place for both good and bad times. I would say the last 2 years, based on the survey, are not good times. You know, 101 million spawning age female crabs are not good times. That's the reason for the bushel limits. They're not just to be adjusted down. They're also supposed to be adjusted up. But where's the abundance so we can say, and you can tell the commission, and we can tell the commission, they should be adjusted up.
Mr. Smith?
That's the reason for the bushel limits.
We have one question.
I bring this up just because you said winter kill.
Yeah.
And the work that was given to us last month, they talked about how the winter kill that you had data on was from Merrill.
No, we had it from Virginia, too.
You did? Well, I thought Maryland said they had 29% winter kill. Is that what it was?
I think overall it was 24%, but Ron will know
the reason I bring this up is because all of a sudden we're comparing different things, and if I'm thinking correctly, the female crab from Maryland has migrated down here in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got 29 or 24% of the winter kill in Maryland, I mean, here we've been talking about how we're going to save the female and how we're going to do this. All of a sudden you're taking that winter kill, which was probably male or small crabs
adult,
or something.
Adult crabs, yeah.
But it was not the female crab.
Right. And down here it was less. So, yeah. I mean,
so all of a sudden we've been talking all the time about female crabs, but this figure got thrown in on us for 29% winter kill, and unless you're sitting there and start, yes.
I think initially we had reports that were just Maryland, and then we had reports that averaged out the two states, but I'm sure Rom has that when he comes up. But anyway, that's why the bushel limits are really there. The intention was always that they can be adjusted. But we're waiting for the good pulse of spawning age crabs, quite frankly.
Thank you, Rob. All right, right, moving on to possession of dark-colored sponge crabs as early as June 1. Discussion.
I imagine everyone knows the history here. The history.
Everyone was here.
Wrong information, but the history is it used to be July 15th. In 2007, Rahm and John McConaughey from ODU, and John McConaughey was on the commission, indicated that because of the warmer temperatures in that time of July, they could see where it could be reduced to July 1. The committee has never really, a lot on the committee, I will say, have never really appreciated the regulation, and we're often told that show us what it's really done. I mean, we've been asked that repeatedly, and we say, well, you know, we can't really tell you. And then last meeting, Johnny Graham made the point that the sponge crab rule, which was put on in 1996, was before the two additions of the sanctuary, and weren't the sanctuary additions supposed to take care of whatever benefits we receive from the sponge crab? So when we advertise this, which we went through the committee last time, that the commission could look at modifying the prohibition against having the dark-colored sponge crabs so they could be had as early as June 1. So, again, that lets the commission have the ability to say, do we want June 1? Do we want something else? Mm-hmm. And the rest is going to be Ron talking to you.
My understanding, CMAQ already supported that last meeting.
Yes, they did.
So it's just additional discussion at this point if needed.
Yeah, Rahm has to present some information.
Mr. Sanford?
Yeah, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask you. What does staff recommend at this time?
I think on this, staff is going to go with what dims, what Rahm has to say. I mean, that's what we did. That's what the whole commission did back in 2007. Because it is sort of a temperature, and there are two components which you have to think about. It's not only the sponge mortality, but it's also at what temperatures is their female crab mortality. And then there's you know, behavior in the crab pot and what that involves and everything else. So I think without further ado, Madam Chairwoman.
Yes, if Rahm, if you could show us your presentation.
Good, I've been saving my tomatoes.
I don't get too often.
Before you go, it gets real.
I think if you want to sign it.
They've come up with, I don't know how many equivalencies it should have been.
That's
more than enough to take care of that.
Yeah,
it's an ambiguous lawn. My wife got stopped by a patrol officer a couple of years ago. Decided she had too many, but he couldn't.
Put this in your hand.
So, from the last meeting, you had asked staff had asked you to take a look at the handling for sponge crabs, for female crabs. So, I'm going to go through what we did and basically provide a review for you and summary for which you can make a decision. So, the problem, we all know the problem. That the current regulations prohibit taking a brown or black sponge female crabs in June, and there may be high female mortality. So what we did is we did a literature review, what was available in the scientific literature. We found some management or technical reports as well, any other resources. And it turns out there's really not that much, but what's there I think is pretty good. All right, so let me show you the one. There have been two studies. This is one of them that looked at egg viability. What happens to the eggs, the egg mass, when you release a crab? And what they did is, I'll just come up here. So they had this section, and they were looking by crab size. So by crab size, the percent of the sponge that remains, okay? And this goes from 40 to 100%, 40, 70, 100. These were all dip-netted crabs. Very gently dip netted and then placed in these holding systems and then assessed on them the number of crabs that were remained. These were both trapped blue crab pod caught. Okay? And what they basically basically found was that in two different systems, North River here and Newport River, that you had a loss of about 20 to 55% of the eggs. And the other study, and this was primarily in the summertime under a little more stress, the other study looked at several months and found somewhere around 25 to 50% mortality depending on the situation. In, say, in earlier times of the year, it was closer to 15 to 25, maybe 30%, and then it got a little higher. And, of course, the higher the stress, meaning the more crabs in the pot and so on, the higher you expect it to be. So this is the this and the other study that I mentioned, and we're going to prepare this in the report, are the only two looking at that. So there is some significant egg-related mortality. Okay, so let me tell you what we did. So I'm going to, many of you have seen this before, and this was one study that we did. We did several studies over several months. This study was a study done with Pete Freeman, and what we looked at is we caught crabs in traps, and then we had Pete catch crabs in traps. We caught clean crabs, we caught light, basically orange sponges, and then we caught brown and black and had them separately, held them separately. And what we found is that in August, there was a very high trap-related mortality. You can see that 13%, or I should say, once we caught them, we then put them back individually into a crab trap with food so that they had no stress, and then we just came back and monitored their survival every few days. And doing so, by day 17, basically, only about, 10 to 20-plus percent survived in August. Very high mortality. And that was basically the reason why we had promoted not having the ban in late July and August, okay? So this is sort of a similar protocol that we follow. So now I'm going to show you the results from several experiments done in different months. Okay, so this is basically a summary of all our experiments, is what sort of you wanted to know. We conducted studies in May, in November. So I've set this up in terms of the water temperatures at the time the experiments were conducted. And this is the proportion alive of females. And one of the things we saw in these experiments, and Pete Freeman's is included here, we didn't really see a difference in the mortality of females whether or not they had sponges. Some of the brown and black had a slightly higher mortality rate, the brown and black sponges, than the clean and orange, but it wasn't that substantial. Okay, so basically sum together the information for females, mature females, whether they were clean or had sponges. So this is all the different experiments run in May, June, July, September, August, November, and I plotted them as a function of water temperature because that is, unless there are additional stresses like hypoxia and anoxia, but that wasn't the case in these experiments, then the temperature is going to be the main driver of survival. And it looks like there's a sharp drop off somewhere around 24 to 25 degrees centigrade. Right, so that's where you start to see, I mean, in June, in that experiment, we had on average 60% survival. So 40% had died within about 1 to 2 weeks in that experiment.
What is that, 70 degrees Fahrenheit?
Oh, yeah, 25 degrees is 77. So 25 or 77 degrees, right around there, is sort of that sharp change happens. By the time you get to 29, 30, well, you know, in the 80s and so on, then you get very high mortality. So basically what this is saying is that somewhere around 77 degrees or 25 degrees centigrade is where you have a pretty sharp change in survival, a pretty sharp decline in survival. So these are the actual numbers, but it's basically. So the next step, I wanted to look at what's happening with males and then to see what's happening in June in terms of water temperature. Okay? Before I go on,
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
You're saying in August only 10 to 35% of the crabs in?
About 10 to 20%.
And that's busted crabs and clean crabs together? that it's that type of a death rate in August.
Over how many?
I want to just...
Over how long a period of time?
2 days is what he said.
2 days? 48?
In August, what it was, the crabs were caught, and they were typically caught after a 1 or 2 day soak time. And then we held them for about 15 days and saw how many survived after that time frame. Because you have some...
Okay, so you don't have any study at all then of what your survival rate is during that 2 day soak period?
No, that's what this is.
No, you said this is a 15-day soak.
Stuff. This is a 1 or 2 day soak, the regular soak that you guys use.
And you would only have 10 to...
Then we took them out from the traps where they had several crabs, right? And we put them out carefully into single traps. So a single crab was put in a trap, fed the whole time, and that, we assume, was very low stress. So the mortality that we observed was caused by that initial crab trap.
Yeah, I got
that. 1 or 2 day soak.
But you don't know how many crabs actually died in that 2 day soak during that time. You know what it was over a period of time.
We do have a daily death rate. Yeah, we had very low mortality right away.
That's like when we had it.
Pulled up the trap.
That's when we had
there
it.
There were hardly any dead crabs in it. They were all alive. And so when we pulled them out, we wanted to see whether or not that had killed. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what trying to get to.
So yeah, we've got one. Weren't getting, yes, we would have gotten something like that if it were anoxia or something like that.
When you did your studies, especially in August where you had such a high mortality rate, did you also do controls of dip-netted crabs at the same time?
We didn't do dip-netted, but we took our own that we caught in traps. So we had a VIMS portion. So that's what this is. So this was the survival rate of crabs that we held, we caught in our own traps and held, and also the ones. So these inverted triangles are Pete Freeman's, and these are Ben's, and it's roughly the same rate.
But the point I'm trying to ask is that if you did, in your previous slide, you had the dip-netted crabs had a very good survival rate.
Right. And so we made that assumption from these.
But when was that, what temperature? That river.
No, that was done at several temperatures. It was done in.
Okay. And they had good survival rates in warm water above.
Yes.
Where were those studies done? I saw the river name. Where were those studies done? I saw
North Carolina.
Okay.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah. Oh. The survival rate in August just bothered me. What if had that crab not even been caught? Say in that same crab, 15 days later. You've got no idea of knowing what that survival rate in August.
From everything, all the trawl data and everything, we see very few dead crabs except where there's low oxygen. So if the crab's not caught, then it's going to survive. It's going to have a pretty high survival rate.
Even in your controlled situation, though, you were having
that wasn't control. We use our own traps. The idea was at one point we wanted to do the study without necessarily having to use crabbers so that we could just do it whenever we needed to, and found that we were basically mimicking in large part what the crabbers are doing.
Yeah.
So that was a point. We didn't do
But that. After you caught the crab, you put the crab in a controlled situation.
Right, but we did the same thing with Pete's crab.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not disputing that. But in that controlled situation, you were still only you had only a 10 to 35% survival rate?
No, but it's not control, because we were exposing them to the same stress. We were putting out traps.
Just that 2 day soak being the stress that you're talking about.
1 to 2 day soak is what's really stressful. Yes. Right.
Mr. Stanford?
How many crabs per pot were you taking those crabs out of? Is my question.
It ranged from, in general, ranged from about, obviously, 1 to about 5.
That was it.
Five or six.
Okay. So you didn't have any pots with 2 dozen, 3 dozen?
No, we did not. The catch rates just weren't that high. I'm sure if the catch was higher, you'd get higher mortality.
So it would be a higher stress. Even with that number of crabs in that pot, there's already a figure that you already know are going to die right off.
And the other thing, too, that
5%, 10%,
right.
or...
The, So there's another thing. This is really, let me go to this. So this is actually what I would consider a low estimate of, I should say a high estimate of survival, but a low estimate of mortality, because you take a crab, let's say you go out there and you catch it, and then you release it. Well, it's already been stressed, and now it's going to go about, and it's probably going to get caught again, so it's going to, that mortality is going to be additive,
right,
which means that probably a lower percentage are going to survive if they're caught multiple times.
Mr. Close.
You know, do you ever take any clean soaps and put side by side and kind of do the comparison?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you did? I was just curious.
And we saw no right. difference between clean, orange, and brown-black, except the brown-black had a slightly higher mortality rate.
The clean soaps?
No, the brown-black than the clean or the orange. Okay.
Right, but the clean soaps live longer?
No, the clean and the orange live a little bit longer than the brown and black.
Right.
Yeah, but the clean one could
not that much of it
rubbed off there.
I think you had one more question, Mr. Nixon.
This is a whole lot of exercises you went through for this thing. We've got about 30 days from the time a large percentage of these sponges start to turn black till July the 1st.
Yeah, can I show you the rest of the presentation?
Yeah, but I'm wondering what we're doing. Nobody's been able to quantify the benefit of this. And now we're down to 30 days and we want to move it down to another, few days or something. Why don't we just do away with this? Is there some funding that you receive out of this for doing all these studies that makes it beneficial? Well, then why are we doing this?
Okay, can I just show you that?
Please.
So this is male survival, but we're not interested in this right now. It was similar, but we didn't have August data, so it's not as complete. Okay, here's what I did. So then I went and I got the water temperature data for June 1 to June 30th, for the last approximately 15 years. And I'm showing you the last 5 years. I'll show you exactly what that does relative to the temperatures that we had in our study. So I'm going to orient you. This basically starts, each one of these is for a different year. This is from 2010 to 2014. It's going from the 1st of June to June 30th. This time series happens to be from the Coast Guard station in the New York River, but I also had it for the others. And what actually stood out to me, and here's 25 degrees or 77. Here's that point at which there seems to be a cutoff in terms of you have high survival when it's cooler, lower survival when it's warmer than that. And by chance, if you look, this is sort of representative of all the time series. I'm only showing you five. There are some little changes here and there. But it looks like that in general, it's about mid-June when the water temperature changes from less than 25 to 25 and higher. And that's in most years. You can see that here. Yeah, it changes. It sort of shifts around a little bit. But and this was sort of a strange year, but it was up already here, back a little bit, still up here. Again, this is 25. It's up above 25. So what this suggests to me, and I looked at all the different time series. I also looked at, since this was a cold year, I looked at what was happening in May of this year, which is a cold year versus other years, thinking, okay, are we going to have much cooler June, and the data doesn't show it. It's actually warming up, and by now the water temperatures are the same that they were last year in May. So what it's suggesting is that this may be sort of a general situation, and in my view, it would support the idea of actually not having the prohibition as of, say, June 16th. I think for June 1st to the 16th, because it's cooler, in general, I think then the benefits are probably there, because you have that lower mortality. Let me just take you back
2 weeks.
So when you have temperatures up here, you've got somewhere between 80 and 90, probably about 85 to 95% survival for females, whereas it drops sharply once you get past the 25.
Yeah.
And so I think in terms of then, scientifically, I think we could support idea that the prohibition is not doing much after about mid-June.
Mr. Powers?
Except for the concept of it stopping people from putting gear in the water where there's an abundance of dark sponge crabs, which will protect those crabs because there's no gear there.
I got news for you. That doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore. Okay.
Sponge crabs are high value. We go there.
Yeah, I think staff has been thinking about this a bit. They also suggested that if you can take those, then you're not going to take other crabs. I mean, there's probably these trade-offs. We don't really know. Scientifically, there's reason to think that a really large fraction of the crabs after mid-June are actually going to die. So they're caught in crab traps.
Can you tell me any benefits this has done over the years that we've had this? I mean, are there any benefits at all?
The only benefits that we actually were able to quantify were those of the sanctuary, where we showed that crabs in the sanctuary crabs outside the sanctuary have 8 times the mortality rate approximately than crabs in the sanctuary. So that's what we know.
So you're basically saying the sanctuary.
So I'm saying on the sanctuary. On this, no. As Rob said, there's so many different regulations put in place different times that we just don't have these controls.
Right. I mean, you're not seeing any benefits. I mean, to me, you know, I understand in a lab you have certain things, but the reality of life is totally different than a lab. And I see this day in and day out. And I can tell you right now, your mortality rates, if you were to go with me, any given day, the 1st of June, you'll see a higher mortality rate in my crab pots alone, just based on the sheer fact of the sheer number of crabs in the pot. And, you know, I feel this is really a benefit, and we have a resource that we're throwing overboard and we're wasting is what we're doing. So that's all I have to say.
Mr. Nixon?
So you're talking about, if I get this right, moving this another 2 weeks. So essentially we're going to have the law from the time they turn dark until June the 15th or 16th, which is probably just a little bit more than 2 weeks, maybe 3 at the most.
And, I mean, you're not going to find that many brown and black sponges until sometime,
Here's my concern about this, and this is what I have to deal with as a crabber. My fear is getting a ticket because the law is so subjective. The colors range. You know, I was talking to Jimmy Dean. My wife has her own boat. She was stopped one day, and patrol officer stayed on her boat for over an hour trying to decide about 10 crabs. That's all she had was 10 crabs. And he looked and looked and looked and looked and looked and looked for an hour. Finally wrote her a ticket. When she took her time and went to court, because it was so subjective, they more or less dismissed it as long as she didn't get another violation, within a year. Well, that's the only one she's ever had. And I go up and down the river, and I see patrol officers going through everybody's boxes like this, and you just wait for them to come to you. The coal law on this is different than any of the other coal laws. We're allowed to have 3 boxes of crabs, the equivalent, I guess, of about 5 or 6 bushels. But these you have to sit down and separate immediately. And they're clinging on to each other at different times of the year. As soon as they hit the box, you can take 2 hands and pick every crab in the box out. So what you're doing is you're harming your other crabs. They're kicking their legs and claws off while you're throwing out these few sponges. I do cost-benefit analysis on everything that I do to some point, and I do not get a benefit out of the time that is lost and the product that's lost to me dealing with these black sponges. I've made suggestions like closing the sanctuaries year-round down at the lower end of the bay. If you do the math on that and you're talking about crab larvae being saved, the numbers are astronomical. And we're worried about throwing back a few black sponges. I had a conversation, I think it was last year, with you at a meeting we had up at the Tides about the stuff that you went through talking to law enforcement about what goes on over in Cape Charles and the amount of head turning there is just because they can't even deal with it.
Yeah,
And we're still insisting on dragging this thing out to the end for no benefit. And it's a law enforcement nightmare for all of us, law enforcement and the crabbers. And we don't know what we're saving. And you're not getting funding for doing it. So why are we doing it?
So what the science would say regarding what you say, what you just said, Pete, is that there, from what we've done, there is no scientific basis for distinguishing between orange and brown and black. You should either
throw them all back or keep them.
Or keep them.
Would you support eliminating, letting us keep all colors? Would you support that?
Well, I would probably.
Because
ahead of that, I support throwing everything back.
Well, what you don't understand, what you don't understand, is that the more crabs you have in the pot, the more mortality you have.
Three or four crabs
don't amount to nothing.
I agree with you. For the numbers we got, I didn't see it. The 1 to 5, but I know that that's not many crabs, and I would agree that there's going to be much more stress. So I think that what might be a reasonable sort of compromise might be something like what you said, Pete, which is to have an area that's just closed, and then in other areas you can take all of them. Because it is true. And like I said, if anything, the brown and black is actually suffering a slightly higher mortality than the others. So you're throwing back the ones that are most likely to. So, yeah, take them
all or put them all back in some form. What this
said.
I do have one more question. Ron, so 15 days later, a large fraction of them die. How long between the time a dark sponge crab is caught and the time it releases its eggs, and what's the egg survivability?
Typically,
or after it's handled and returned to the water, rather.
Yeah. So that's a complicated question because crabs do all sorts of weird things too. They've been known to mutilate their egg masses when they're in stressful conditions. We already know that some percentage of the sponge is already dying. Typically, it takes about 2 weeks to go from orange to black.
But once you get a black sponge crab, if it survives 3 days, will the larvae hatch out or whatever you call it?
We never got the funding to do that. And my sense is that there's going to be higher mortality of the larvae, the eggs, I should say, than the females.
But from just a straight timeline, how long between it's a dark sponge crab and it's rubbed the sponge off because it's hatched, laid all the eggs? And
probably just a few days.
Clarify. You're talking black.
Yes.
But that's black. Not the law. It's dark coloration.
Okay.
There's a 14 crabs thing that you have to look at. And somewhere in the middle, it becomes illegal for you to keep it. I think you had a picture of it.
That's the point I'm making. You have to have a color chart on the boat. And like Ty has talked about 100 times in here, they'll change colors over the course of an hour.
Yeah.
The law enforcement patrol officer, he's trying to do his job. He thinks you're trying to cheat him, and it's a real conundrum every day, what to keep and what not to keep,
Rob?
I guess what's missing is no one really knows the volume of sponge crabs that are harvested. We just don't know.
Right.
We don't ask. It's not on the forms that you fill out, even if you reported, everything A-OK. We don't have any. But what I will say is the industry was behind this measure years ago, almost 20 years ago. When we all met up at the high school, up at Warwick High School, and the commission came back with industry members, that's when this was established. So, as was stated earlier, someone needs to come and make the case as to why this is not something to go forward. But you need to make the case because I think what Rob has presented shows there's a water temperature basis, which at least is something for the commission to look at. Now they have to hear other aspects. It was not an easy thing to get it back to July 1. I mean, that discussion lasted quite a while before the commission finally said, okay, July 1.
So, Rob, we know the recommendation from VIMS or what that may be. What is staff going to support?
In this, staff has to go with whatever VIMS recommends because it's based on the available science.
Any further discussion? Ideas?
Are you looking for a...
No, it's just discussion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No.
I'll ask a question.
Mr. Sam?
I mean, if you had the funding, would you do a follow-up study to show possibly the difference in things or not? I mean... You know, because like I said, I mean, I pick on you and I don't mean to, but it's like I see this day in and day out and it bothers me, you know, and that's why, you know, it really bothers me.
Yeah, we were actually hoping that maybe we could get some funding to even do it this June.
Right. That was a good point that he made. We have to deal with this every single day. You know, you deal with it occasion, and you have to listen to us vent, but it's a fear every day. We're going, what are we doing this for, you know?
And from a recreational standpoint, if they were enforcing recreational people at the beaches like they do you guys, they'd run out of ticket books. Because the recreational crabber, Joe, go out three times a year type crabber, they have no clue about this regulation.
No, not on this
not
item.
I think we need to talk.
Go ahead and talk through. And move on to modifications to the sanctuary areas. Does Rom have a presentation?
Rom has the information.
He has the information.
We left last time with three ideas about modifying the sanctuary, and one of them I asked Ron to look at again because throughout the last few years there's been lots of information that there's not exactly parity in the spring between the northern part of the sanctuary and the lower part as far as opportunities to crab before the sanctuary closes. Whether or not you still think that there's a lack of parity, unsure, but I'm not sure what Ron's going to show you, but I know that we looked at an idea that it may be possible to take the large area above the 1942 sanctuary and go generally to the Rappahannock across and classify that as an area that would close later. May 16th, and then look at the lower area and close that earlier, whether that's a week, whether that's 2 weeks, hard to say, but I think that's been the change since you met last, and so it'll be a surprise to me what Ron's come up with, but we'll find out.
Okay, so what we did is we looked at the data that we have available that sort of constrained us to some degree, but we happen to have data that would look at upper portion of the sanctuary versus the historical sanctuary. And what I did is I just drew a line for ease from here, since it's a point already, over to here. So this part, that part versus the historical sanctuary. And what we did, when we looked at the data that we have, closing this June 1st instead of May 16th is basically about equivalent to closing this if you then close this May 1st instead of May 16th. There's about an equal trade-off. about equal. In fact, it's slightly in favor of conservation. So if you close this May 1st and close this June 1st, it's slightly in favor of conservation. So that looked to us to be a reasonable conservation trade-off.
And in between those two?
The actual point, the line separation could be somewhere around here. Once you get too far in here, then it's not viable anymore. It's not equal. We originally looked at this versus that, and that was not at all equal. And so it turned out that somewhere around here, the cutoff versus that was about equivalent.
So you're saying from where your hand was, up there, you're going to close all that down May 1st? Is that correct or not?
No.
Okay,
no.
Just the lower. Okay,
so
that's going to stay.
This is June 1st. This is May 16th.
Okay.
This is May 1st.
Okay. Now, can I continue? How did you come up with the equivalency? I mean, I don't understand that exactly. Can you explain it to me?
I wasn't expecting to give a presentation. Otherwise, I would have shown you that. But I could show it to you in a little bit, pull it up. But basically, we happen to have data for these different segments from a previous study where we're looking at the upper sanctuary, middle, and historical sanctuary. We're trying to assess how many females are there through the month we did. We had
right. You had a graph up.
That graph.
And it showed a larger percentage of crabs in the upper in certain months and a lower percentage,
right.
in June.
So we looked at that data for June.
Do you still have that slide? I think you showed it to us.
Last meeting?
It was, yeah, last meeting. Do you have that? It's just like it shows the months, and it's like a graph is what it is. It might have. Yeah, that's it,
that's
right there.
That's the one.
Okay.
So basically, I took this. So fortunately, this was what was called, what we call the upper
right.
protected area and corridor right here. That's why I drew the line here, but I think you could probably do something like this. And so we just looked at the June data for the fraction that's in the upper versus the historical sanctuary.
Right.
And as you can see here, it's almost equal fractions in the upper versus the historical sanctuary. This year, when it was very low abundance, then it was a slightly higher fraction in the upper impact than here. So it's a little slight trade-off. But the variation across years is such that it's about equal. So that's basically the information. But there's even more to it. You have to add the fact that this is also protecting females coming down from the feeder line. And that's where I think it's a bad area.
Right. I mean, basically, you want to shut us down in the lower bay 15 days earlier, and
I don't want to shut you down. That's
well,
just what was given.
Well, yeah, right. You know what I'm getting at is this. You know, I made up a motion a little while ago, bring back 51 bushels, et cetera, et cetera. Really, what that amounted to is we have to find equivalency. Basically, is what we have to find. So, you know, this is just a suggestion. Have you looked at bushel limits to possibly keep the whole sanctuary open till June 1st again?
No, I haven't.
Would that, I mean?
I think what you run into there is you're looking at spawning potential in this situation.
Right.
And you're looking at harvest in the other. And then in between that, what we'll be showing the commission on the 26th is how some crabbers are able, as you know, to move.
Correct.
Matter of fact, they move quite a bit, and they move around, and they chase the crabs. Other crabbers stay in the area. It's true for Accomack County, and it's true for other counties as well. So if you try and figure that out, you'd end up with a ton of recoupment, meaning that they don't want to have losses. They're going to figure out how to move. Now, do you think that crabbers, if you have that area that Ron showed on the northern end, do you suspect if the 42 sanctuary closed early that there'd be a flock of crabbers up to that northern end for those 2 weeks?
No.
Or even for 1 week? So the only reason we're doing this is because
right.
situation where we always hear from the northern end that as soon as they're ready to start doing pretty well, and they do it for a few days or a week, whatever it is,
they have to leave.
Closes.
Right.
That's what's you know, generating this.
Right. You know, we're down in the lower bay, we see the same thing that they do in a different aspect, really. You know, I didn't catch any crabs really until the 1st of May this year in the lower bay, and now I'm out of there. And, you know, basically I have no choice but to go back to Cape Charles this year. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line at this point. And, you know, I understand where they're coming from, but I think there needs to be a little equality for everybody in the bay to be able to go to work. And that's where I'm coming from, you know. I mean,
the trade-off could be 1 week also.
Yeah, so, you know, I just say just, you know, I mean, from what Alan Parks may be able to comment about this, but I think really what they're looking at is they've got older men on Tangier that don't like to travel to Cape Charles anymore, and they kind of depend on that, you know. It's, I think.
It's hard to hear you, Mark. I can't really hear what you're saying very well.
Can you move the phone over here?
It
won't go through there.
Can you hear me, Alan?
You haven't talked.
I don't hear you very well at all. I'm sorry.
The phone needs to move over here. You need new microphones.
You don't
have
to fund
me. Yeah, no. Didn't
say that. One thing donation. Yeah. Why don't you put it?
I'll see what we have. We just changed all our phones like this over.
Okay. Alan, can you hear me?
You go ahead. Try it.
Yeah. Okay, Alan. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, basically. What I was saying about the Upper Bay Sanctuary is the fact that a lot of older Tangiermen don't travel to Cape Charles anymore, and a lot of the reason you want to keep the area open longer is because they actually need that area to continue to work. Is that true or not?
Most definitely. I mean, it seems like everybody gets crabs at their back door during the migration north in the spring. Soon as we get, you know, our run going on here, we have to move. And it's like we have nowhere to go. When you look at a chart and you see the sanctuary line, it's automatic into shallow water. And I'd say 9 years out of 10, you're just as well off to throw them on the dock. It's awful. It's awful right now.
Yeah.
The crab, and no doubt. See, we've got a lot of areas when you go south of Tangier. We call it the ghost hole, around the right behind the channel buoys. You know, that's muddy bottom, deeper water. And I know for a fact I could be making a very, very good day's work if I could be in those areas right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of, Alan, that's kind of the situation we have in Lynn Haven, too, you know. We, once the crabs hit down below, we have to quit, you know, so I just...
Right, and I'm like this. I would not vote something for me if it's going to put somebody else out. I wouldn't feel right doing that as a human being. I mean, if it benefits me, but it puts somebody else out, how could I do that with a clear conscience?
Right. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think we all need to go to work is what it comes down to.
It's it most definitely. I don't know. This I'm an angry person this time of year. Every year, it's just a terrible time of year to be a crabber.
Yeah.
And knowing with this extremely high price, I could be making couple $1,000 a day a lot of days if I could get in this sanctuary. No doubt in my mind with these high prices, with the Memorial Weekend coming, that I couldn't be doing very well. And we are so, you know, we've got nothing else to target. You know, we can't go up a river. We can't go after sponge crabs. This is it. Until your shedded crabs get hard enough to trap on, so that's middle of June. So from now, middle of June is nothing. You know, we are really suffering. And like I said, I'm not going to vote to take away from somebody else to give to me.
I gotcha. So anyway, that's my point.
Year.
Yeah. You know, my point is that if we could find something to accommodate everybody in the bay, I think it would be really beneficial to the fishery in general.
We've got to be a happy medium here. Everything's done on numbers, figures. If that don't come out just right, it frustrates me to no end. I can't help it.
Yeah, I know the feeling, believe me.
Mr. Moore?
I don't mean to fire a shot at Ron here, but I can say what's on my mind. Ron, you're a scientist. I know of you. And you're a crab expert, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, the sponge crab is easy. I think every woman in there will agree with me. I think the sponge crab is the most easiest crab to trap. When you're targeting a sponge crab, you fill your pot and she fills up, and you pull them out, the most you got was spot food. So I don't know if I can rely on your information or not.
He's basically saying the same thing I'm saying. Your data's flawed about the abundance per crab pot.
Is what I'm saying is, you can throw, I think Marshall will probably agree with me on that, and yeah. I know you will, Mark. When we target sponge crabs, they try it very easily. You throw the pot and she fills up, and you can't say much about your information. It's the most you caught was one to fall up to the pot. It's kind of a little joke shot.
I guess two questions. One, I know we have talked a couple of different meetings about trying to redraw the line on the southern end of the sanctuary. The first question would be for Rom. And I think you were at those meetings, if we were to draw that line like we had talked about, basically from Cape Henry to the Lynn Haven entrance and then across the Little Creek, do you have any idea about what type of conservation equivalency that might take to leave that area open?
Well, you're still talking to me, right? I'm sorry.
No, I'm talking to Rom now.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What we did for that stretch that was suggested, we thought that if you made the change with the upper and historical sanctuaries for the time of year, that you could also justify opening
that little area at
right.
the bottom.
But y'all are not, nobody's really willing to go before the General Assembly to try to change the code.
Well, that's actually where I'm headed. I think maybe what is helpful to at least have... Yeah, you need code.
You need the code for the lower. For the 1942 sanctuary.
Is maybe...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was not dealing with that. I was dealing with the ocean side.
So right now the 1942 sanctuary goes to Cape Henry Lighthouse, is it?
Correct.
And what they're suggesting is moving that line over to somewhere around Lynn Haven and Lynn.
No, what we're talking about doing is that sanctuary line follows the shoreline from Cape Henry to the...
Ocean View Pier.
Yeah, Boone's Pier. And what Mark was talking about is drawing a straight line from Cape Henry to some point
on that pier. Mile marker.
Or somewhere, and allowing crabbing inshore just in that little bit there.
Right. With the permanent closure of the rest of the sanctuary year-round is what it was.
So changing that...
In other
words,
we're still going to have a sanctuary, but it's going to be year-round for most of the historical, but a small portion along the shoreline with the ocean.
So you're okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
I know you and I have talked about that as well.
Yeah.
I think maybe one thing that could at least move us forward, and I think this is what you're going to ask as well, is could we at least have a motion and from CMAQ to have VMRC commissioner work with the General Assembly to at least to give VMRC the ability to change that or to change that to that pre-described line. And that will at least give us more options to deal with in the future when we're talking about a give-and-take sanctuary. Because I think that line is one of the things that unfortunately continues to trip us up.
Right. You know, it's simple, too, because all they got to do is ask for, you know, discretion over the boundaries. They've already asked for the time change.
Yeah, with the sanctuary.
You know, to be able to control the time, so it's just another step.
So, I mean, is that something we could add? I mean, we could make a motion and ask the commissioner to work with the General Assembly on that.
You could. You
We haven't, but we can.
Well, I think you should talk to them before.
Is usually the agency does very little as far as legislation.
Right.
You probably see that over the years.
Really?
It's mainly the constituents that do the legislation. Now, John Bull feels differently than we need to find out.
Right, doing that.
Well, what I think what Chris is talking about, you know, he and I, we're up there all the time. If we could get a legislator to carry this for one of us or both of us, the question we would have is, would it be possible to get the commission and staff to support being able to?
And further,
right.
Mr. Powers, I was going.
And further, I would suggest that if you're going to take that route, that you work with staff, because I've done this with bills before, you work with staff to get the wording that makes them happy or content or not grumpy with you, and then you take that to your legislator as something that staff would support, but the commission is not putting forth the legislation, or the governor is not, I guess is the way it comes out.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, the reality of it is, I mean, we're going to be down on the oceanfront about maybe 2 or 3 weeks. The only reason we want to go to the oceanfront is this, and you've seen it. You've seen it. You told me this. You went up Lynn Haven. You couldn't believe how many buoys were up there. I mean, we take that place, and there's nothing left when we're done.
What?
Because scientifically, it would be simpler.
Absolutely. It would be simpler.
Well,
be simpler to justify.
That's a risky proposition, crabbing in the ocean. You can have the most beautiful weather and have a large swell, and you go back on Monday and all your pots are on the shore, and you have to fight the garbage man for him. You know, you're down there, you're crabbing in a four-wheel drive truck.
We're talking two different things here.
Right, we're talking, yeah, we are.
So that's why we would rather crab inside the bay than in the ocean.
Right, but we're talking two different things here. I think what we had previously been discussing was making adjustments to the boundaries on the 1940, the sanctuary.
Well, he asked the question, would it be easier to make that change or the other one?
But the other one is a commission change.
Right.
Right.
Done
crap.
Nothing. Same old, same old.
Yeah. Mr. Cox.
I didn't want to speak on the 42 sanctuary, but I did a little research, and you need to check into it. The sanctuary had a lot to do with the war. It wasn't actually about saving crab. It had to do with the war and submarines and the Germans and all that kind of stuff. And Virginia Beach was building up. Anyway.
Well, that'd be interesting to know.
We're trying to go off subject about outdoor. But we all know in the fall, a lot of crabs will migrate down. And in spring,
Yeah, that's why we've been upset for years. We have foot pots on the back.
So that's what we need to concentrate on. What makes it fair for everybody? We all get the shot. By the time the warm water temperature warms up, the crab migrates north. The Germans are shut down. That ain't right. That's
so
wrong.
That's the basis.
That's wrong.
For
yeah. Sanctuary. Ron is willing to look at narrowing the sanctuary. The problem is we didn't
We didn't have a chart
right.
that you could walk up and say here, here, yep. here, and here, and we would know what to do from there. Instead, we had different lines, different scenarios, and I think you threw up your hands last time and said, okay, let's move on. So, I mean, if you want the sanctuary to be a continuing issue, it may be what Chris Moore said, that we report that perhaps there needs to be something down at the lower end, down at Cape Henry and Dover, and to get legislation that would be supported by the commissioner, but that still may not address what the staff thought was a big issue for the committee, which was the parity.
Yeah. Mr. Moore.
Can we go back to the map that we put up that actually had the Latin lawns with the sanctuary? Jeff, can you make it one, maybe zoom in just a little bit more?
I'll do it a different way.
And then maybe focus a little on the northward end.
Fine.
Yeah, go a little bit more north. Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways this gives us what we would need in terms of putting something in and redrawing a narrower sanctuary that I think a lot of us have talked about that may last longer in terms of time period, but be much narrower in terms of geographic area. And I don't know if we can give you some idea. You know, we can at least throw out a couple of ideas tonight to work on. They obviously wouldn't have effect for this year, but I think it's something that we could continue to have the discussion on moving forward.
We did that.
Well, but we didn't. I think we tried to do that.
We did that. He narrowed it down. And it was, he narrowed it down, closed it all year, and then opened this section up. That was a joke.
Do we need to be more specific?
Right. That's what, I don't think we were specific enough in what we wanted to see versus what we got out of the discussion. So,
I like to see just a. I live up on the upper end, and I'd like to see us to move the line to the lighthouse at Windmill instead of inshore the lighthouse, because you ain't got nothing to go by. You can't see anything. You don't have any idea if you haven't got a plotter to go by. There's nowhere telling where you are. And I'd like to see it open, if we could just open it 2 weeks to the 1st of June from Windmill up, would help us a lot.
Amen.
So that was my point I made about the time frame. If you change it, because folks
up north
don't have
chance. You've got to change anything down below. I don't think it would be that much difference.
Uh-huh. When you talk about, Rahm in the past saying you're protecting 75% of the female spawning stock, is that safe to say that there are three times as many crabs in the sanctuary as there are other places? What is it you're trying to protect by keeping the sanctuary closed at the upper part? The sponge crab, where you just said in June until the water temperature hits 77 degrees, that you didn't have that high the survival rate was pretty good.
If they don't get put in the basket.
No, they don't. Crab.
No, that's what I'm not.
I mean, if that's what you're trying
to
do.
We're trying to. So the whole point of. Couple different reasons for the sanctuary. One was to protect a certain fraction of the spawning stock that you need for persistence. The other one is a product from the sanctuary that don't harvest. Don't want to grow in a pot.
You know what the problem I have with this?
And
we can't get
so that they don't actually just
stuck. We can't get
anywhere. Rahm, can you look at Mr. George's? I'm sorry, let me let Rahm speak first.
I think part of the problem is you're looking at this particular issue needs
to be
a meeting to establish, take 3 hours in a meeting and establish what you really want to do with the sanctuary. Get all the ideas flushed out, come to some agreement, what are the best. best ideas, and then let Ron work on that, and then come back for another meeting and finalize it. It doesn't, it's not going to happen May 26th, it doesn't look like today. You can have everything ready.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that this can't be done before fall, and it gets in place, and everyone knows it's going to be there. There's nothing wrong with concentrating on it that way. Because it's a little bit all over the place. And I understand why, because it's been, you know, since 2001 that everyone has had different reasons for why the sanctuary isn't really exactly what they hoped it would be. But it's there, and Ron has agreed to work on the sanctuary. There has to be some, I'm not going to use the conservation equivalency, but I'm going to say that there has to be some tie-in to where we know that it's not going to increase harvest dramatically during the time period of the movement of crabs and during the time period that they're sponging up, during the time period that they're spawning. Most of that's taken care of. I mean, we only have one sanctuary, right? Essentially, for a long, long time. And I think the only thing that those brilliant people missed on was they didn't put it in place for any part of May when there is spawning in late May. Other than that, they did a great job. So I think if maybe just a suggestion, if you can think about doing that as a committee, it would really help. But I don't think you're going to do it tonight. We're already wearing ourselves out.
Everyone agree?
Maybe do another meeting in the round just on the sanctuary.
Yeah.
Committee in agreement?
Yep.
Nothing but sanctuary.
Our sanctuary meetings before, you know, we discussed all this winter. And I thought the reason I had an outburst at last meeting, because I thought, you know, you were going to come in here and you were going to present something totally different than what you threw up there. I thought I was going to see figures, percentages of savings, basically not, okay, I can go with this, but I can't go with this, and we need to close this sanctuary. And that's why the outburst was there. I thought you were going to say, okay, we're going to close the Lower Bay Sanctuary, and we're going to save X amount of crabs. I didn't see that, and that's kind of what I want to see.
We did address some of that and tried to say what some of the trade-offs were.
Yeah, I guess I'm...
like the fact that it wasn't the trade-off of the 42 Sanctuary was not a huge narrowing of the rest of the
right.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, that's, you know.
But it would be much better for me if you said, okay, here's what we'd like to see, this line or this line
right.
or that. And then...
Well, that's why I gave you a line from Cape Henry Light. You know,
and you can do that's why I just drew lines.
Yeah.
Along certain depth contours.
Mr. Cox.
Well, I'm going to give you something to work on then. Just what I said a while ago. I'm up north, up the Tangier area down. That when just about the time the crab shows up, that sanctuary is closed. So I'd like to see that portion of the sanctuary stay open another month after the crabs get a chance to migrate north and they get a chance to catch them. That's what I want you to work on. Tell me what the difference would be. Yes, a portion of it north.
June.
Yeah, still close the southern portions like you've been doing. That's never going to change. Do something with the northern portion while the crabbers have a chance to catch a crab. Or 2 weeks, 30 days, whatever the case may
June
be.
June 1st would help us.
Right. That's what I want you to work on for our next meeting. No. No, you didn't.
We said for the upper portion, close that June 1st, and then it's approximately equal if you then close the lower, the historical sanctuary May 1st.
Well, that's what I thought.
I did say that's about
equal. I think
they
moved
68.
At what point?
I don't think we should take anything from the lower. I don't think that's fair to the ones down there.
That's what I was getting back to.
Keep the date the same, just change the date to the northern. Extend out at 30 days longer, or 2 weeks, or whatever.
How do you compensate?
It makes it fair and equal to everybody. That's how you compensate it.
The crabs.
I need to look at something. The commission's not going to remove some kind of controls and then not compensate.
Yeah.
It will if you say to.
It will if you tell them to.
Well, what I would do is I would tell them how many crab, more crabs are going to be caught, and I can tell you approximately that.
Then extend the 1942 sanctuary to put out there so the Germans wouldn't sneak in on submarines. Extend that to the Chesapeake Light then. About that one.
Bob.
That's big enough, ain't it? Chesapeake Lighthouse. That'd be far enough on it.
You can go a little further.
I appreciate all
the
ideas.
That's separate. I'm reluctant to have Rob piecemeal here and there. We'll know what was said tonight.
Okay.
We can talk to Rob about that and get him so he understands what was said, because there's been a lot of different ideas, but I really think you need to just...
We'll have a separate meeting.
Okay. He did.
On this issue, and you need to figure out what are the top three or four situations that you want to see with sanctuary. In specifics, we're going to have a chart up there. You can go by the coordinates or anything you want. If you don't like the dates, it doesn't sound like the dates did very well tonight for changing the dates of the sanctuary. For closing later in the northern area open and closing earlier in the southern area. That didn't get much traction.
Mr. Powers.
I don't think that it didn't get much traction, but what you have is the men and women here who are crabbers are saying, I don't want to hurt somebody else to get what is good for me. And that is, and the bad part is, with a limited resource, and you're going to have to do that to try to keep the harvest, or however you want it to be fair to the crabs. Yeah, parity. But you got to be fair to the crabs is the way to think about it.
I mean, is there a such thing as if you extend it for us, even drop our bushel limit just for those 2 weeks? I mean, just not. I don't mean a tremendous drop in the bushel limit, but what can we come up with here? You know, I don't want to take from them, but I want my piece of the pie. And I want, you know, is that possible?
Rob.
I'll tell you something.
Well, I think that's why we have to have a meeting dedicated to the sanctuary issues. And yes, that's possible. I don't know how it would look right now.
All right. It was just a thought thrown out there. And I realize everybody's tired. And I don't know if Diane will be in on the next one or what. But anyway, it was just a suggestion.
I'm going to give another thought. If you close the law, them guys going to come up above. So why would you close something? You know, I mean, you're defeating your purpose there. Just leave ears open and just extend theirs 2 weeks.
Okay. We'll have another discussion, I'm sure. I've had several requests for a 10-minute break.
All right.
Everybody agrees? 7:25?
That's 15 minutes.
Sharp. 8 o'clock is creeping up.
Depending on which clock you're looking at.
By that clock over there.
At this point, we're going to open it up for recommendations or motions for items A through D.
Can we read, I guess we can look at our minutes, but there were a couple of these that we dealt with last month, right?
We dealt with the...
Because we basically dealt with sponge crabs already.
Correct.
I think it was brought up in here that they would recommend opening, you know, the 16th, that date could be changed. Isn't that right, Rob?
Right.
I mean, that wasn't settled last month. I mean, that was some new information brought here this month.
Yeah, what's in the draft regulation is as early as June 1. And then I think the commission's going to hear from Rob presenting the temperature information and the recommendation from
I think it, I mean, is it safe to say that everybody here would be in favor of that?
We'll make a motion and we'll see.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
There you go.
Okay.
Comments.
The brown sponge crab. I mean,
comments or discussion on the motion?
Yes. Well, I have a question for Rob. Because of the way it's advertised, that would be the most lenient that we could get out of it. Okay.
As early as June 1.
I was under the understanding we were already supporting that.
The motion was the 15th or June 1st?
I was saying the 15th.
Yeah, okay, the motion was the 15th.
The discussion was the motion. You wanted June 1.
That's all we can get. This is
all we could do was advertise it as early as June 1, and that way the commission wouldn't be pigeonholed. And that's the way it stands in the draft regulation. So the commission has the ability to move it, and it looks like if BIMS is going to recommend the 16th, staff is going to recommend the 16th as well.
Can I make an amendment to
you can try.
To the motion?
Go ahead.
That we add the words no later than June the 15th or the 16th. That way, that would give them the option if somebody made an argument, they could.
I think that's a good point, Pete. Yeah. I'd go ahead. I'll amend it to that. Yeah.
That's good. Go with it.
Okay.
So what we're saying then is that the 15th would be the latest, and the commission could even say, well, let's make it June 1 or June the 5th or anything in between.
If June 1 has been advertised.
Yeah. No, I'm in agreement with that.
Could you repeat that for the members that were outside?
That we move to this dark sponge crab that can be caught no later than or open no later than June the 15th. It was advertised for June 1, so that's, we'd be in line with what BIMS is recommending, and maybe somebody were to make the argument and it go over, you might get a little extra, but the date to be no later than June the 15th.
So I asked just to make sure it's only a day, but what you're saying here is the prohibition
any further discussion from the committee? Any comments from the audience? Ty, did you have your hand up? No.
I guess there's no way to postpone that until next month's meeting, is it?
No.
Yeah, it'll be into June by next month.
Yes.
It did take place as soon as it
went on. We're in the middle of May right now, and the bay water's almost 70 degrees at Sewell Point. So by the 1st of June, you're going to be the 75 at Sewell Point.
Well, Ty, that's why I made the suggestion that I made, because if you or I or both of us or others came up and made that argument, it's advertised for June the 1st. So this gives them the option to make it any time from the June the 1st until then.
That's what I said.
Yeah. No later than.
No later than.
They can make it as early as they want up to June the 1st. But we would not want them to make it any later than the prohibition stops.
Then on the day of the commission, if Rahm presented the evidence that the water temperature's at this and you see that difference, then you can come in and say the water temperature's here right now at the end of May, and that might make your argument to have it.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, but the only other point is that we're not going to get any support from Rahm or Rob for any other date, and that is 2 weeks. If we could convince them to get us squeeze another week out of it, then I'll be over there and I'll be trying. And I haven't been to a commission meeting in a long time, because last when I was there, I told them I wasn't coming back.
my argument is the same thing like Al Mark said, was when you're working on the bus of soaks, you normally catch the 15, 20, 25 bus of soaks in a pot, and if you leave them over one night, anyway, and if you don't, you know, on Monday morning, you catch them on Tuesday.
No, I think May 15th would be a better date. Then we wouldn't have to see them, period.
Your first initial statement of just do away with it would be the best idea.
The thing about it is we're not going to that was my point of asking Rob. The commission can only do the most lenient thing that's advertised, and the most lenient advertising was June the 1st. Otherwise, they'll have to have another. They'll bring it up for another meeting. Now we can get that done too. Well, you know, you and I, we crab in the same area, so I know exactly what you're talking about. But I think the whole thing's a big waste to me. But I would take 2 weeks rather than July the 1st again. If that's the little bite I can take, I'll take it right now and then argue for the thing to be gone next year.
Any further?
Spoke.
We have a motion and a second.
Yeah.
Everyone in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Rom?
I'll make such a motion.
Mr. Sanford, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'll second that. Yeah. I got a question. You were asked by the commissioner back in 2000, whenever this first started, they'll do a follow-up study. I mean, to me, it seems to me like you already have his blessing or the blessing of the VMRC to do a follow-up study. So
yeah, the thing that's happened over the last, 5 years since budget cuts is that the Institute itself has to come up with the funding.
Right.
We did what, about 4 or 5 different studies. We did those, and he can no longer do that. One of my staff was taken, and so on. So that's why I'm saying
right.
There's some kind of recommendation from the craft committee and support from staff, then I can take that to the administration and see if I can get the study.
Right.
All right. Once again, we've got a motion and a second. Is there any discussion from the committee? Any discussion or comments from the audience? All right, I'll call it a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Once again, motion passes unanimously. Any further recommendations on items A through D on the agenda?
Yeah.
Ken.
I'd like to have some discussion here on this winter dredge fishery. I personally think it's time that it needs to be opened back up. I think that the economic value of the crab will justify it, and I think it'll help for the to keep the price more consistent in the spring if we don't let that market so much. In the spring. I don't know what the motion would be. I just would like to hear from other people how they feel about it. That's one reason I was asking Rom so many questions about the survival rate of the crabs. when he was talking about it, because this is the only fishery that has actually been a study done on. And the survival rate was pretty much better than anybody expected. Am I correct in that?
In the mud bottom.
In the mud bottom.
And we had already laid out a potential plan for that, for which both Ben and the MIC were.
You know, I think it's probably some argument among the crabbers as to, you know, what you all are calling mud bottom and what they might. Anyway. It's like you were talking about earlier about I'll take 2 weeks. You know, I think right now, even if it was just the mud bottom, the fact that it's addressed again and should be done. I mean, that's my opinion, and I'd like to see this this committee stand behind that you know that it's. Time for it to reopen. I don't know how to put it in a motion, so if any quick discussion, anybody would knows how to put it.
Mr.
in a
Mullis,
motion.
You have a comment?
Yeah, I do want to comment. I don't know how we jumped the agenda around because I wanted to comment about this in order. But we talked about crabs early on, crab dredging in particular in the beginning of this, but I didn't know that was public comment period. And I want to ask CMAQ, and this is me talking, so don't get me confused with the crab panel, okay? This is Bill Mullis, the ex-crab drudger, okay, from Gloucester County, grew up in Matthews on Gwynn's Island, all right? I want to ask CMAQ to recommend to the commission to delay the vote until after CMAQ can spend dedicated time on this subject in particular again, just like we talked about sanctuaries tonight, okay? I'd like to present a discussion on behalf of the crab drudgers that haven't worked for 7 years now. The vessels tied up were some of the larger boats used by the watermen, therefore affecting their largest investment to harvest seafood. These weren't Carolina skiffs that got tied up when we shut down the crab drudging, okay? They're work boats, something that's dying in the bay. I see everybody tonight talking about not wanting to hurt somebody else. Well, I wonder where that notion was in 2008. So that's a platform I want y'all to stand on when you think about this issue. If nobody wants to hurt anybody else, what happened to compassion for one of the oldest fisheries in the state of Virginia when they shut it? It's easy to recognize that this management was politics that was driving the closure. I'm going to go ahead and admit it. I don't care whose feelings I hurt. If y'all want to get any hurt any more than I am, let me take a $125,000 boat from you and promise that you go be back working in 3 years. It's 4 years after that, okay? It's been 7 years now. We were sold bad stock. 1993, when the peeler pots were added, that's what started the demise of your fishery. Ask anybody that's old. Go around this state and ask anybody what happened to the crab fishery, and everybody will tell you, peeler potting. I'm sorry. I'm just repeating what I've been told. I didn't say that myself. I've gathered the information from 70 older crabbers and asked them, where'd you see the change in the state of Virginia? The biggest change was when the shedding operations came ashore. That promoted the fishery. So here's some points I want y'all to consider on the crab drudge issue. Someone built a negative public view of the harvest method by negative articles published in newspapers. They quoted mortality, had no studies to back it up, and ignored studies that had been done in the past on harvest mortality in crab drudging, one in particular that was done in Gloucester County. Some of the authors are sitting nearby. The latest study shows mortality not as claimed by what was published in the newspaper articles. Crab drudge fleet was already down to 53 boats in 2008. It was the cleanest fishery in crabbing, the easiest to enforce. They left no gear in the water, and all the boats landed daily. It was pretty clean. Everybody knew where we were coming back home. after taking the right to harvest with this gear, there were more crab pot licenses issued immediately following the closure, even after Virginia and Maryland declared crabbing a federal disaster and received federal money. Staff representatives have said publicly they saw the effort shift into potting and landings shift into potting. I heard it again tonight. I've got it recorded every time I've heard this, and this is about the sixth time I've heard that statement from staff. They saw the effort from crab dredging go into crab potting, and they saw the landings go there too. Okay? There's a state code that says managers cannot discriminate between harvesting methods that was clearly ignored. Tonight I sat in a room and I heard how important it was for us to uphold the law in Maryland for them coming into Virginia. How about the law in Virginia for Virginians? It's in the code 28.2-203, number 4. Conservation and management measures shall not discriminate against user groups. If it becomes necessary to associate or align fishing privileges among various user groups, such allocation shall be fair and equitable to all fishermen. It's right there. Look it up. That's 28.2-203. So I've heard us talk about enforcing laws that allow other fishermen to come in the state, but we can't enforce our own laws and codes on how to treat our own fishermen. So I'm going to find out why eventually. State and VIMS has referenced a large winter crab kill recently. These crabs could have been harvested in December and some of January, depending on the weather. I think there's people standing in the room that aren't part of the scientific community probably know more about winter crab kill than y'all do today. I hate to say it, but I'd like to discuss it with you. When did you start doing a survey on winter crab kill, and how do you do it? Jimmy Dean's father knew more about winter crab kill than any man I ever knew. He could tell you when it was getting ready to happen. He could tell you when they're washed out of the hard bottom and they won't going to get back in. That's what happens. So a lot of people, I'm not sure they even understand what causes winter crab kill. But if the winter crab kill is that big, and now it's a new subject to why the crabs aren't there, and let me go catch some of them before they die if we're going to lose 30% of our crabs anyway to crab kill. Marshall, you know it better than anybody, partner.
I agree.
Okay? You and I both have seen that many times. You know, if there's all this winter crab kill out here, that's a mismanagement of a resource when the crab dredgers could go get part of them very same crabs that die. Okay? There's been no payoff for anyone else in the fishery by crab dredging being closed except for the new potters received somebody else's fishery. There's no benefit to the resource. Here we are 7 years later. There's no benefit to the resource. Even when there's been a spike in the survey, commercial landings don't particularly represent those spikes. There's been two spikes. They harvested really good in 2008, and I think the harvesters, the crab potter, saw a spike in 2012. But there's no benefit to the resource here. There was an ineffective pot license buyback that allowed recipients to re-enter the fishery. Imagine that. Can you really do that? Take the state's money and throw it away like that and buy pot license back to reduce the amount of effort in crab potting and then not have a law that those people can't have to stay out and they come right back in? Maybe somebody should have been paid $100,000 apiece for the crab dredge boats for the loss of the value of their vessel that they maintained for that fishery. Everyone was sold bad stock. It hasn't paid off to the dredgers, the state, the public, or the other crabbers. It didn't pay off. It's 7 years later. The fishery should be reopened. It shouldn't have to wait on an abundance trigger. No one else is. If it's an abundance trigger, it should be 1 year, one stock amount trigger, and the crab dredgers should go back to work. It's plain and simple. when it's reopened, there needs to be a reasonable discussion about hard-bottom sanctuaries, but nothing like has been suggested, which quite frankly is wrong in a lot of its bottom assessments. I can prove it. I see areas that they said it's hard bottom. I can take you there and put you in mud neck deep, okay? Acre after acre after acre. You've seen it, Marshall. I see you smiling. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay? We tried to tell them when we were working on the crab dredge pilot that we can be truthful. And if some of us honestly really know where all the damage was done on hard bottom to crabs, and we'd be willing to draw that on a chart. But as far as trying to create a new sanctuary that wasn't in place when the fishery closed is just another stab at the fishery. The fishery needs to reopen in the historical sense that it always operated. Okay? It really does. Like I said, this hard bottom sanctuary deal to me is wrong. It's absolutely wrong. It's been too long, and the list of excuses is exhausted and hold no merit at this point. There's a pilot that's already been looked at. Y'all know about it. It's been approved by VMRC staff. They were involved in it. It's been approved by VIMS, by Rahm and his staff. CBF has looked at it and said they could probably support this. EDF looked at it and said they could support it to open this fishery. And I'm going to beg y'all one last time, okay, and I will call the commissioner. This is my last public appeal to open this fishery, to ask this fishery management group and this commission and these managers to do what's right. There's 7 years of wrong. It's a very small amount of boats would re-enter this fishery. Could be extremely clean. The pilot's already there. It's time to do the right thing. And it's time to do the right thing, use it, and let a small group of winter crabbers interested to go back to work. After all, is anyone getting $90 a basket right now? So you want to tell me you want to exclude a small group of crabbers that's in a historical fishery that gets 3 times to 4 times the money that's paid. So today a crab potter, or a few weeks ago when it fell to $30, the day of the last CMAC meeting is when it fell to $30, that crab potter is going to have to catch 3 bushels to what 1 bushel could pay off for a crab dredger in the wintertime. That's not good fishery economics. And that's what's broke with the management style in the state of Virginia. There's no economics behind it. There's no metric to the fishery. We'd sit here and talk tonight on and on and on about this theory and that theory, but to me it's all theories because none of it's factual finding. But there's some things that are factual finding. And that's what I always go by as facts, that I know is a fact, not a theory or something on a blackboard. But the thing is, the factual finding is, you get up here to manage, they've got a control rule that creates the theory of how many crabs can be taken out of water in the season. I never hear about how many bushels that is, and I never hear about the performance of the harvesting sector. How many bushels were we allowed to take last year, and how many bushels did they get? That should be driving all y'all's decisions. To me, we're driving a truck backwards into a barn with no rearview mirrors on it. Let's just keep backing up and failing some more. That's what's broke here. If y'all can't see it, you need to go home and rethink what you're doing. Now, I'm serious. I've been to a lot of fishery meetings all over the country on a lot of different issues. And this right here is one of the worst things I've ever seen done. It's how this crab dredge fishery was shut down, how the fishery was shut, and how it remains shut after poor excuse after poor excuse. It's time to reopen the crab dredge fishery. It's a very limited amount of boats. I think the pilot called for 1,000 bushels per boat. Jimmy Dean was part of the survey. I know, Mike, you were involved in it. This fishery is not as demonic as it was explained to be. What difference does it make how you catch a crab? Whether he's in a peeler pot or a crab pot, or whether you catch him in a crab dredge. When you caught him, you just caught him. What you ought to be looking at is how many crabs are we catching commercially, and how many crabs should we have been able to catch? But I don't ever hear that in any meeting. I ain't never heard it yet. So until somebody figures out what a tack is, and somebody's going to figure it out, because this Bay-wide agreement's got it coming at you like a steamship. But if somebody don't sharpen their pencil and get real up here and quit playing games, the future is going to roll right over y'all, and you're still going to be sitting here. And I'm not trying to attack anybody. I'm not attacking the scientific community. I'm certainly not attacking staff, and I'm not attacking CMAQ. I'm sorry y'all are in the position you're in today. But me personally, I've heard enough of these excuses about crab dredging. Okay? I've told people I will take it further than this, and I'm very close to it. All right? So if nobody wants to explain to me why this can't be done right, we'll find somebody else they can talk to. But I'm very serious about this, and I'm going to urge CMAQ to start right here at CMAQ and buy some time. It's the first thing I requested in my little rant here, my speech, is delay vote on this and have a CMAQ meeting where we can come in here and sit down and talk it out. Talk about why we can't open it, what's the real blockage here, what is the problem, and then move forward.
Mr. Millis, we're getting down to less than 10 minutes here.
I've got some questions.
Mr. Cox.
First of all, I want to know why this is your last meeting. You're going to stand up here and say this.
Because I don't think it's going to be effective, Marshall. I'm just going to have to take a different route with this, and I'm going to have to get somebody's attention. And I think everybody believes it's a joke, but it's not really a joke.
Are you going to appear in front of the commission when it comes up?
I'm going to appear in front of the commission with some attorneys, next thing you know.
But okay. Are you going to appear this month and
yes,
read
sir.
That same statement? All right.
Yes, sir, I am.
Another comment I want to make, when you're talking about hard bottom and mud bottom, you're aware of the fact sometimes in a real cold winter, soft bottom's hard.
I've seen
hard bottom turn soft.
Yes, sir.
So I don't go along with the hard bottom because that – All depends on the winter.
That depends on the weather and what time of year it is and where and where you are.
Yep. And me for one, I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to have enough time tonight to discuss hard bottom, soft bottom, what to do here, what to do there. But I think Mr. Mullis made a very good suggestion. I think maybe, and I'm going to put this in the form of a motion, that we table this and bring this back up in another CMAQ meeting to be addressed.
May I suggest on your motion that you don't say we table it, but that we request that the commission table it at the coming meeting.
Yeah,
that's where it needs to be.
So amended. If somebody will second that,
I'll second that.
Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is approved unanimously again. Dale, we've got 5 minutes. Do we know how long the presentation for the Blue Crab panel will take?
My last one was 7.
All right, we'll take a...
What did we find out about the tagging system? Anything at all?
No.
How long would your presentation take if you were to go ahead and give it?
That's what I was...
I mean, we can sit here another 5 minutes instead of keep doing this every meeting.
That's fine.
Yeah, let's just do it and have it over with.
I would suggest that we
limit to 5 minutes.
Taking another 10 minutes afterwards.
Is that a motion?
Huh?
Y'all don't hold my crab dredging comments against me now. It is what it is.
You'll keep it under 10 minutes.
Okay, here's the information about the lobster pot tagging. Here's our latest updates.
We'll do this as quick as possible. And just a little bit about the panel. The dedicated group of industry representatives that meet regularly to discuss ideas for long-term benefit to the blue crab fishery and the crabbers. The panel represents crabbers from around the state for their key concerns and recommendations. Through the panel and CMAC, crabbers have the opportunity for a strong voice in shaping industry to co-manage a fishery and blue crab populations. The next down arrow is a little list of some of the panel members and our support team that we have. Little background on the panel. We began in 2011 with informal meetings. First formal meetings began in 2012 after VMRC endorsed us. Mission was to develop a long-term plan for a biologically and economically sustainable blue crab fishery and the need for reform. Blue crab populations have shown a disturbing decline trend over the past two decades. This key economically and ecologically valued species needs special management attention. And then this one just shows where we've been with crabs and where we're going. And then you can see it 2008 when the government declared commercial fishery failure for the Chesapeake blue crabs. And in 2013 and 2014, it looks like we're somewhere near the same area. We did get some spikes, but spikes in a survey and spikes in actual harvesting don't always coincide. There's been some reasons. You know, I say reasons are theories why that didn't happen, whether the red drum ate them or who got them. And then this is one of Ken Smith's quotes. He talked about managing conservation and fishing dollars, not volume. And Pete kind of hit on that tonight, saying that he analyzes everything he does to see if it's efficient or inefficient. He's making money or wasting his time doing whatever practice he's doing. We want conservation and fishing for dollars, not volume. And give watermen an annual limit, and they will fish when the profit margin is the greatest and not fish for the less expensive small and female crabs that we need to protect. And then we'll get in here really to some of our recommendations, and y'all did get some of this at the last meeting. I think we were 7 minutes last time. Latent effort. And there's something I want to point out on latent effort before we talk about this. To me, there's no difference between latent effort. If you're worried about effort that could enter the fishery, but it's not there yet, is there a whole lot of difference between that and extra capacity that is in the fishery now? Meaning, people that are fishing too many crab pots, I hear it talked about over and over and over. So, you know, before you figure out what to do with crabbers that aren't even fishing, maybe it'd be important to look at crabbers that are fishing that are fishing two people's gears and not one like they're permitted for. So I'm wondering how much latent effort is fishing legally in the crab pot system today. So that's why latent effort's so important. We've got over capacity in the fishery because we say we can't monitor pots. So update the control date to address latent permits is one of the ideas. Even with the 2008 control date in place, more than 50% of eligible crabbers are inactive in crab pot sector and more than 80% in peeler pots. An assessment interest of those still waiting on the list 7+ years since the last crab harvest. So, I mean, if are these people that are on the waiting list, would they really even go crabbing today now, or do they have a better job and wouldn't even go? Develop a capacity metric for the fishery to establish what level of effort is sustainable and assessed annually. And that's more like talking about an MSY, a maximum sustainable yield, and it does need to have some economic theories and basis in it, not just totally scientific management alone. One interesting thing about a fishery that you'll learn if you do the research, and there's people around that can teach you this, if you manage a fishery for maximum sustainable yield economically, it automatically achieves scientific sustainability every time. You may not have known that. But if you set up here and manage blue crabs for everybody to make the most money, you'd probably end up achieving scientific sustainability within the same management regime. And so that's why we're talking about a metric. Now, this is one option that we've talked about that has not been voted on by the panel, but we're getting ready to do some more work on that, I think starting tomorrow at VIMS. So develop a capacity, a metric for the fishery to establish what level of effort is sustainable and try to assess it annually. Three on there is an annual declaration in or out of the fishery. No penalty for declaring out. It just allows a more precise estimate of annual effort. And many fisheries require an annual declaration, including the crab fishery in Potomac River. Some of the accountability tools that we've talked about, and we've spent a lot of time on this, is creative and implement incentives for electronic harvest reporting. We think electronic harvest reporting is extremely valuable. I think crab harvesting needs to be real-time method. I find it difficult to realize that at least buyers can't be electronically reporting today. The federal buyers in this area have been electronically reporting for years now, and there's more crab options under the federal SAFETS reporting system than there is anywhere. It's unbelievable how many options are in there to report. So there's a way to do this already in place. Increased use of electronic harvest reporting is a key element in recommendations to close the gap between crabbing activity and understanding what we're doing. The system is in place, and the panel has conducted outreach and training on this. And some of the suggestions could include a reduced license fee, priority access to other fisheries, our peripheral participation in season extensions, just some of the theories. What can we do to actually get people to electronic report? Me personally, I say make it mandatory. It's real easy. There's your incentive. You got to do it. Pot tagging program. You know, that's VMRC has previously recommended a pot tagging program. There's broad support for this by many partner agencies and other programs. I think CBF asked about it over 10 years ago. A budget was a concern then. Cost of tags is lower now, and the panel could help request funding to cover administrative costs. I just gave you the information. The pot tagging for the federal lobster pots, they're 14 cents a piece. To tag an 800-pot rig out of New Jersey with a 10% overage of extra tags costs $112. So I don't think that that's such a big cost that somebody can't bear it, that industry can't bear tagging these crab pots. And, you know, I'm not saying people won't try to cheat, but it's an incentive. VMRC comes along, they pick up a pot, and there's no tag on it. They can watch, see who comes and fishes that rogue crab pot and figure it out. One in the lobster fishery, people were concerned about, well, how many extra pots are you going to set? What are you going to do? So you can have 10% overage in the lobster fishery. But you know what it guarantees? If somebody fishes every tag he owns, he's still only cheating the system by 10%, isn't he? Not 100, like we're hearing about in crab pots, where people setting double rigs and fishing an entire rig every other day. So, you know, the budget was a concern then. Cost of tags is lower now, and the panel could request funding to help administration. And I think pot tagging is going to be a big step in the future for y'all, particularly hearing your discussions earlier tonight. To go with pot tagging, we're talking about bushel tagging, just a land side check kind of in the water to the pot tagging system, just something to go along with it. You know, basically, people are talking about quotas, and everybody acts like it's a bad language, but you've got a quota right now, whether you want to admit it or not. The only one of the more enforceable regulations you have in crab potting today is your bushel limit. The guys have a season that's X amount of days, and they've got X amount of bushels. Tell me that's not a quota. What is it? Call it anything you want, but basically, you've got a daily quota. So you can call it annual. You can call it weekly. You can do the math. But right now, you already have a quota system in place. You're using it right now today. You've been using it. Management and research recommendations is strengthening the co-management approach for blue crabs that include cost-benefit analysis of regulatory decisions. Recommend increasing regularity of interaction between the panel, CMAQ, and VMRC. I think we're seeing that happen, and I'm sure y'all aren't happy about me being here with more stuff to deal with. Assess impacts from the peeler pot fishery. We've talked about this before. After we did the mortality survey on crab dredging, we suggested then, why don't we look at other fisheries and see what's going on in them. There's been talk about a potential study to increase mesh size from an inch to inch and a half or 2 inches, and our call rings in current pots, and a collaborative study with watermen to quantify the differences that that would make. And state of the science on blue catfish predation impacts, and prioritize current and future research needs. You know, I think we do need to know a little more about how many crabs blue catfish are eating up the rivers. And kind of a summary of what's known in the gaps, what's not known. So maybe somebody can assess that. We'd like to find some money and get Ron Lipkus turned loose on studying catfish and how many crabs are eating, but he probably already knows. So reevaluate the percentage of harvest assigned to recreational crabbing to better quantify combined effort. And just want to thank you for your opportunity to present our recommendations. And the next steps could include work with CMAQ and VMRC staff on more details on these recommendations. Many of these lay the groundwork for an allocation system called for in the Chesapeake Bay Agreement. And the panel can assist in outreach and pursuing funding and additional funding as necessary. So we'll do all we can to help you guys do your job and do what y'all need to do. And I know we're last minute, and I'm 10 minutes over. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Don't go away yet.
Yeah, we've got questions.
First question, your panel, how many members of the crabbing industry are on your panel as compared to how many, or attend your meetings as compared to how many crabbers are out there? What I'm concerned, what I'm looking at this and asking the question, is this just another waterman? I realize you're working differently than most waterman organizations, but is this just a fourth or fifth waterman's organization in Virginia, and this one focuses on crabs, or
no?
Or is this one all crabbers are a member of this?
Anybody wants to be a member.
Anybody
can be
who
a member,
wants to be,
and it's in, and it's you got a website that does everything. VMRC was the one that initiated these talks. It's not a waterman's association. This is an industry panel, and it was brought forth. Jack Travelstead, it was his idea to bring this forward, and that's how it started. The informal meeting started with Jack back in 2011, and that's kind of where we ironed out who was there, who wasn't there, what we wanted to see, and we did not want this to be just another, as you want to say, association. I mean, we wanted to see this actually go somewhere.
Yeah, well, my concern in asking that question is, let's just say we take three or four of the recommendations from this group and we implement them, and then we get a crowd of people in here saying, but I'm not a member of that group. I don't agree with it. I think it's totally wrong to do it that way.
You know, nobody's going to agree with everything.
Yeah,
anyway.
I know, but that's my concern.
But it's certainly a transparent going on. It's completely
transparent. It may be now, but it wasn't initially.
It always has been transparent since the beginning.
No, because public was not allowed to attend.
I'll make that a motion. Second to Martha.
Anybody can attend. And we were formed by VMRC. And I have a letter from Jack Travelstead. That is our term. We have their terms of reference. That Rob works in the parameters of their terms of reference for management. And we also have very distinct guiding principles for this panel that were given to us by VMRC. And we try to adhere to them very closely.
Thank you, Mr. Mullis. We're past meeting time, so.
Motion been made here, June.
One thing, Rob.
I do have one comment. So please realize that the panel, the industry panel, does go to CMAQ with any recommendations, just like tonight. So if you're worried about what that means to the crabber universe, then it means the same thing like what you've done for years and years as a committee. So the idea is it's not as if the panel was ever meant to be just completely off to the side as a as an association or anything else. The panel, the hope is the panel working for future of the crab industry and the fishery vets everything with CMAQ. CMAQ will determine what of the recommendations that are the ones they want to go forward with. So there is a pipeline right to CMAQ system. And I think that Mr. Mullis represented that in a couple of his slides on the organizational slides of how things would work. So, and then I guess you have to ask yourselves, as a committee, with the panel and with CMAQ together, do you represent enough of the crabbing public that whatever recommendations come from CMAQ more or less encompass what most of the crabbers are supporting? And as was said, some things just are never going to be supported no matter what. So thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Meeting is adjourned.
Exactly.
She was quick on that one.